You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show on a Monday, looking ahead toward tomorrow. Not only do we have more tickets for our just-announced breakfast with Coldplay, big band, little place. You get to be there, help interview the band, and listen to them play live. Not only do we have that, William Shatner will be here tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen.
Nice.
And it's been a while, Sarah Michelle Gellar, back on the Kevin and Bean Show. That's all tomorrow right here. But first, give me a little
Are you saying tomorrow is better than today?
I'm saying today is fantastic. Okay. You're not going to believe how good tomorrow is also. I'm saying they're both must-see TV. That's all what right. I'm saying. All right. First, though, give me a little bit of that Coconut Record song, would you?
All the shadows in the city used to love you. What a pity.
That, my friends, is the voice of actor Jason Schwartzman, who joins us in studio right now talking about the long-awaited return of his series called Bored to Death. Jason, how are you, man?
Hi. How are you guys? How are you?
Oh, we love having you in. You're one of our very favorite guests. But I got to be honest, you look homeless now. What happened? Hard times?
No. Are you referring to this beard?
Full beard.
This beard that you can hear.
Awesome.
Do you hear that?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Just for
you look like a young Santa Claus now. What's going on?
But I take that as a, so thank you. I take that as a compliment. And B, it's for work. It's for work. I'm growing out for work. But
Are you playing Santa Claus?
No, I'm not playing the young Santa Claus.
Okay. Are you playing a fisherman who lives in a fjord? What are you playing?
I'm playing a sort of a stand-up comic from the 70s.
Okay.
Who's a fisherman?
Right. The 70s. Okay.
Who's a fisherman? Good.
Yeah. It's funny because you grow a beard, at least in my case, like I'll grow it and it looks like stubble for a long time. And then all of a sudden people say, hey, you have a beard. You know, it's weird. Like there's no middle ground.
It's just one day it's stubble happens. And the next day it's a full.
The middle ground is people thinking, wow, is he homeless?
No.
But they don't say it out loud.
But does anything else? Read home? I mean, is there a...
No, nothing else about you seems homeless. But...
Well, there's a scent.
There's no, yeah.
What does your wife think of the beard?
She loves it.
Seriously? Really?
She loves it. She loves
does
it.
Does she loves it because it's on you, or does, like, would she love anything about you?
No, she would not love anything about me. And she loves it, I know for a fact, because she's been trying to convince me to grow one for a long time.
Is that right?
Yes.
How about that?
Yes.
Interesting.
And not to embarrass her, but to look at her track record of ex-boyfriends, a lot of them had beards.
She was heavy into the acidics.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to embarrass her, but it's, you know.
So she has a type.
It was grow it or else?
Is that what
you're telling me?
It was grow it. Yeah, it was grown or else.
All right. Have you seen, you grew the beard, obviously, after you filmed the new season of Bored to Death, which, by the way, comes back tonight on HBO. So have you seen your co-star, Zach Galifianakis, since you've grown your beard so you can get all whisker worry with him and find out who's better?
No, I haven't seen him since, but I don't think it's not as big. I mean, his is a whole different thing.
His is, he's been growing it for a while, so.
But he, you want to talk about growing fast?
Yeah.
That guy can grow a beard.
Really?
Like overnight.
How long is this? This is a couple of months.
This is 6 weeks.
6 weeks.
Yeah.
That's still very impressive, Jason.
But he
really is.
You remember he was on Saturday Night Live a couple years ago and he shaved his beard midway through.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the people on our show were nervous because we were set to start our show a couple days later, and you know his beard is a part of our show.
Of course.
And it's like in the writing.
Of him.
Yeah. And they were freaking out. And he's don't worry, I can. And I after like 2 or 3 weeks. He was back
to full beard.
Yeah, I mean he can grow. It's amazing.
I watched that episode. He shaved that halfway through Saturday Night Live and had 5 o'clock shadow by the time the show ended. It was pretty remarkable.
I think now if you go back and watch it, I'm not sure, but I think he wears then a fake beard at the end of the show.
Yes, that's what
he
did.
Is that right?
That's exactly what he did for comedy because he's wacky.
He shaved it.
What's it?
Then put on a fake beard.
He's one of the people. It's Jason. It's
he's
Ted
one of
Danson,
the best.
And it's Zach Galifianakis. What's it like working with him? Because he seems like he's a little nutty.
Zach?
Yes.
He's not nutty.
He's not at all.
No, he's the best. I mean,
I love him too, but he seems like he's weird, crazy, fun,
super incredible. One of my closest. I mean, I'm honored to say that he's one of my closest friends now, and you know.
But does he surprise you, or do you kind of...
Surprise me with...
Whatever. He just seems like he's the kind of guy that would do stuff all the time that's like a little shocking.
His mind is incredible.
Yeah.
Like the way he thinks, and he... I laugh harder with him than a lot of people. When I come home from work, my face is hurting, and I have no more laughter in me. Like my wife could try to do something funny,
and
it doesn't work. No, I am obsessed with his humor. And he's really. I think it's funny because he gives Ted a hard time. And Ted, by the way, is
Ted
a god.
Hilarious.
So I just would like to say that up front that he's a god.
Okay.
But it's just amazing because Zach really can lay into him. But as a joke, I remember one time Zach had a took someone's walkie-talkie that was on a set, and he was just it wasn't even on. It was on, and he was doing fake walkie-talkie calls. And at one point, he said, "Ted's career over." And it was that single line gives me a faith in a higher power.
It seems to me that you, like I would, like you don't feel like you could make fun of Ted Danson that way. You know what I mean?
Because of the respect
so
you have for
him,
right.
And whatever. Yeah, but Zach is that guy who could get away with it.
You'd be surprised what the human body is capable of doing after a couple of days with Ted.
I love how I saw some of the publicity materials. This is actor Jason Schwartzman in the studio on the Kevin and Bean Show. Bored to Death returns tonight on HBO. And I saw some of the materials, some of the interviews you guys did promoting the new season. And the guest star list you have is unbelievable this year. And Zach says, yeah, it's nice to finally be working with some real actors, he says as he looks over at Ted.
Yeah.
Who all's on the show? And how do you get such crazy guest stars for a little HBO show like this?
Well, I do think that it is a great show, and
I agree.
And I think that people, I'll be honest, I think that it draws great people, and there's not a lot of work right now. It's hard for everybody to find, and so I think that it's a great place for people to come and hang out, and we have a great set, and you know, the writing is really good. And we play strange characters, and the real writer, Jonathan Ames, these situations that he comes up with are so unique. I think people love it. And we have a lot of returning guest stars like Oliver Platt. We had Olympia Dukakis back this season.
Both great.
Dick Cavett.
Oh, how about that?
God. I don't even
you
know
and Dick Cavett. He's got to be 100.
Okay, maybe that wasn't the... he's alive. Okay. He's alive, and he's incredible.
Amazing.
He's amazing. He interviews me. I go on his show, the new Dick Cavett show, this season. And I was so nervous because I was being interviewed by him. And even though it was acting.
You weren't sure he was alive first.
I wasn't sure. But then you find out that he's extremely alive.
Right.
He's the coolest.
But let me ask you this, Jason.
Who else is on the show?
But you've been interviewed by everybody in the... All right, hold on a second.
We're asking the questions.
But you have the Google over there? You got the Google?
No, Isla Fisher, yeah.
Who's on the show this year?
You've been interviewed by everybody in the world. Hold on, Jason. I want to get back to this.
Okay.
Because you talk about how you're nervous with Dick Cavett. But you've been on all the talk shows. You've been on with Letterman and all those guys. Probably even Carson. You've been around so long. I mean, do you get nervous sitting down in front of David Letterman, too?
I
think so too.
I think I've said this before, but you know, your guys' show, all these shows, I admire them and am a fan of them too. And so to be on them is a surreal experience.
Mostly ours.
I am excited every time I come in. I do get so excited when I come in. I'm like, I can't believe this is actually happening to me. And I'm not lying. But like, you know, I've been on David Letterman show. It was a while ago. But it was so nerve-wracking because, you know.
He's David Letterman.
He's David Letterman. Yeah, and he's incredible. And he has the power. He's the best.
And, how about Jon Stewart? Have you done his show?
I did it once. It was incredible.
That must have been
It was incredible.
Too.
It was so cool. I mean, and you see like why these people are so successful. Like they really are just they're just plugged in a way. Like when I was on Jon Stewart's show, you just walk out there, he's just talking to you and everything he says is so funny. And I mean, of course, that was a while ago too, but all these people are amazing. I was on the Today Show with Hoda. And
Kathy Lee,
I've been on there a couple times with Kathy Lee, but she was not there. So Kourtney Kardashian was my guest host.
You were on the Kourtney,
and
day.
I thought they were great too. Was great.
See, now it doesn't mean anything because you think everyone's great.
That's not true. I can tell you who's terrible.
Okay, please do.
Jason Schwartzman is here. Bored to Death. This is the show. It returns tonight at 9 on HBO. We will talk more about it when we return right after this on the Kevin and Bean Show. Our friend, if I can call you that, Jason,
you
actor Jason Schwartzman in studio with us here on the Kevin and Bean Show. You loved him in Rushmore and I Heart Huckabees, Marie Antoinette, Darjeeling Limited, Scott Pilgrim. What a film resume. Although you probably don't tell people about Bewitched, right? You don't even mention Bewitched.
No, I had a...
Do you mention
I don't.
It?
I don't Do I mention it?
Is it on your resume? Or
you mean
that?
Do I offer it? Like, as a right. like you might know me from?
Uh-huh.
No.
Probably not usually, right?
But I have to say that I didn't have a fun time doing it, and I got to work with Will Ferrell, who's one of my heroes. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
And honestly,
sure.
I had an awesome time, and the movie is actually pretty funny. But I only don't mention it first just because of all the other incredibly bad things that could come before it that I could offer myself up to. It would be third in line.
All right, let me put it this way. If you were to be, you know, tragically and sadly hit by a bus on your way out of here today,
yeah,
would the first line of your obituary be HBO's bored to death's actor, yes, Jason Schwartzman killed today? I think so, right?
Of course.
I don't know. That's a tough
question.
That's your calling card today, I would imagine.
That's a whammy to throw at me at 8:20. Yeah, in the morning.
It's a little tough.
I wouldn't think it about. I would think it would say a great man,
great beard.
A great man, great beard. A great man ran over somebody today.
Well, let's play this piece of audio from Bored to Death, getting ready to start. Where are we up to now? Season three starts.
This is season three.
Season 3 so on HBO fun. At 9 o'clock. Such a fun show. And before we hear the clip, just set up for folks who are brand new to it. You are playing, sort of, Jonathan Ames, the guy who created the show, wrote the material that it is based on, right? And you do what in the show?
I am a writer by day, but I make no money being a writer. I'm basically such a procrastinator. And I had this girl leave me because she said that I wasn't an adventurous man. So right. I put myself up on Craigslist as an unlicensed private detective because I'm also a big avid reader of mystery novels. And I end up getting all these bizarre cases, but because I'm unlicensed, they're not, you know, the normal cases. And I kind of get thrown into the world of it. But as the seasons have progressed, the cases have actually gotten more intense and dangerous and insane. And this season, I don't even know what you would call some of these. For instance, there is one episode where I'm staking out, I'm following somebody who is pretending to be me.
Okay.
Who is pretending to be John. Another person has put himself up on Craigslist.
Okay.
As me.
As
to get my money.
Okay.
And the case, I'm following him following two
okay.
plushies
this
having.
Very,
two plushies. Two plushies. Two plushies. There's plushie sex. We got it. We got plushy sex.
What more do you need? You got plushy sex.
Elder
got
love. We have elder love. What more do you need? We have elder love.
We don't need that.
You don't need that?
So Jason and then Ted Danson plays George on the show and Zach Galifianakis plays Ray.
Yes. Ted Danson.
See?
Sorry. It just comes out.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
Let's roll the clip.
What I have learned in my 63 years is that we all walk this razor's edge. Feeling like our lives are both meaningful and meaningless.
I'm searching for my father.
You're sick of being a park slope mom.
I want to be your son-in-law.
Are you delusional?
It's obscene.
This is a really good case.
Charlie!
I think I'm being followed.
I'm going to clear my name and set you free.
Five more minutes, kid, and we shoot you in the head.
Do you have to be so explicit?
Ted's daughter, who's my age,
yes,
gets engaged to a man who's his age. So that is a man his own age saying, I want to be your son-in-law. And it's so twisted. It's awesome.
Is that why you jumped back when you heard that?
I was like,
wow.
Okay.
But that's why we like it, because it takes such weird turns.
Yeah.
There are very few shows that you can kind of not predict where it's going.
Yeah, I mean,
and this one of them.
When you get the script that you read it, it's so exciting, because the stuff that comes out of Jonathan Ames' brain is truly unique.
He seems amazing, yeah.
And
somebody who is writing about this upcoming season, and tell me if you agree with this this characterization, Jason, made the point that all three of you guys, you leads on the show, mm-hmm, are disastrous with women, have no abilities or affinity whatsoever to make relationships work with women, and somehow you are all drawn to one another, and every season it seems like the male friendships get so much stronger to the detriment of being able to relate to women. I thought that was interesting.
That's very interesting. See, why didn't someone tell me? Why don't they?
Did they tell you that?
Yeah, before we shoot this season. That helps me so much. I'd like to go. Like, that's great.
Maybe you could call them all back to the set.
God, can I get that guy's email address and thank him and send him some flowers? But it is true that, yeah, like, we are all very bad with women. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's why I love this show, because it's not ironic or cynical. It's very like hopeful. These guys are trying to find love.
They really mean it, and
they really
well.
Mean it. Yeah. But they are. They mess up their lives all the time. They always are failing and some messing up with women, or they say they won't drink and then they can't resist. And that's the kind of the heart of the show is this attempt to do better but fail.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's a really, really fun show. I mean, we have always been urging people to check it out. It's one of those shows that makes you glad you have HBO, and it comes back for season number 3 tonight at 9 o'clock. And Jason Schwartzman, always great
Thank
to have you.
You
in, and congratulations on the little baby. I'm glad all that's going so well for you.
She should be listening right now. Hi.
Wait, how old is she?
She's 10 months old.
She shouldn't be listening right now.
Really?
No, I doubt it. I mean,
she should be listening now until she's around 20, seriously.
She tunes in right about now. She likes about 20 minutes before the showbiz beat.
Oh, fantastic.
So it comes in about 17 minutes early.
That's good news.
So, yeah.
Jason, it's great to have you.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
Our man Beer Mug was Johnny on the spot yesterday. He went down to a little bit of a Southern California sensation, a brand new Chick-fil-A restaurant, because as Ralph so eloquently pointed out yesterday, you can't get a chicken sandwich anywhere else.
Nope. That's only they've got the patent.
So this is the first time chicken sandwiches have ever been available in the history of the world. So a lot of people were lining up for several days because, well, here's the manager that Beer Mug talked to yesterday to explain why there was a big line of campers waiting for the restaurant to open this morning.
What we got going on is our first 100 promotion. So essentially what's happening is there's 100 people camping out because the first 100 customers in line tomorrow morning get free Chick-fil-A for a year.
Wow, that sounds fantastic. Wow, that is a lot of Chick-fil-A.
That's amazing.
You have one reaction to everything everybody says.
Come on, you know
just
that by
awe.
Now.
Just everything awes you.
Everything is amazing.
Everything just blows your mind.
That's not amazing. It's just interesting. Barely interesting is what it is.
You're so right, though, because I sense that Mug's reaction would be the same to, hey, you just won the lottery, to, hey, I just accidentally ran over your dog in the driveway. I mean, it doesn't matter what it is. You'd be like, that's incredible.
Wow, that's great.
So I started thinking about this when I realized that people were camping out in some cases for 2 full days for Chick-fil-A. And I thought, look, I get the draw. Even if you love – I don't know anything about Chick-fil-A. I guess I've eaten there.
It's a great sandwich.
It doesn't stand out to me. I guess it's good. All right. Even having said that, and even knowing that free food is good and having a free chicken sandwich every week for a year would be fine, would be nice to have. I would take it. I would enjoy it. It's not enough to get me to camp out for 2 days. It's just not.
Well,
right?
What if you didn't have the money for a Chick-fil-A sandwich, and yet every day you could know that you had a hot meal coming your way because you just slept out for a couple days?
That might be worth it.
So in other words, only homeless people are the people who are in line, right? Because they're the ones who don't have any money to buy food.
Starving actors or musicians or whatever, this could be a way to, you know, save some money. I can see it.
Let's hear a little bit of the people who were in line that Muggs had a chance to talk to. Here's number one.
What number Chick-fil-A grand opening this is for you?
This is number 68.
Would you be willing, if it came down to it, to give me your wristband?
It can't be done.
I love
First of all, it can be done, obviously. It's physically possible.
I also love that Muggs has been working with Kevin too long, and now he just puts words in random order.
Can I hear that opening again?
Yes.
Yeah, let's hear that first sentence again, Muggs, if you can bring it up.
What number Chick-fil-A grand opening this is for you?
Thank you, Yoda. So that guy is obviously there because he's just hardcore Mr. Chick-fil-A. He said his 68th, was he talking about his 68th restaurant opening?
No, he's number 68 in line, right?
No, in line.
No, 68th restaurant opening.
Not possible.
Yes, possible. This guy is a raving Chick-fil-A
fan. All right,
hold
on. Time out. Yeah. Back it up. Let's play the whole thing from the top because I missed this. I was laughing so hard at your inability to ask a simple question that I missed this guy. Can I hear him again, please?
What number Chick-fil-A grand opening this is for you?
This is number 68.
Would you be willing, if it came down to it, to give me your wristband?
It can't be done.
It can't be done.
Down to what?
Not if I offered you $100. Yeah. Not if I put a gun to your head. If it came down to it.
That's a good question. Does he travel all over the country looking for Chick-fil-A openings?
Yeah, he's the man for that.
All right, give me one more, please. Give me one more.
Oh my God!
So this is your first time dabbling in food.
No, it's my second time. I love chicken.
Oh, so this is your second Chick-fil-A.
It is.
Fantastic.
What a great interview.
Fantastic.
What a great interview.
It's your first time dabbling in food.
Mugs, you're the best. All right. Now, having met some of the people camped out for Chick-fil-A Hollywood, and by the way, am I wrong about this? They have Chick-fil-A's in other Southern California communities. There's one like that in Redondo, right? There's other locations. Yes. It's just this is the first one in this zip code, and that's why people are going crazy.
Right.
We want to talk to people who have camped out for something. I have never done it. There have been things that I've been very excited about in my life. I've been excited about new records coming out. I've been excited about movies coming out. I've been excited about concerts, absolutely. Right. Yeah. I don't think I've ever camped out. Yeah, maybe I showed up for a Ticketmaster event 2 hours early or something like that to try to buy tickets at a box office. But camping out overnight to wait for something, that's not in my DNA, I'm sorry.
No, I don't even like to get in line.
I don't either. I'm terrible about that.
I won't go to a buffet in Vegas if there's like 10 people in front of me. I'm like, screw it. I'm going to go sit down at a restaurant. I'll pay full price. I do not like to be in line for anything, let alone sleep in line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Camping out. So we want to talk to you right now on the Kevin and Bean Show at 1-800-520-1067. That is our toll-free number. There's no line. You just have to pick up the phone and give us a call. If you've camped out for a Friday day after Thanksgiving sale, if you've camped out for a Harry Potter movie, whatever it is that you have camped out for, maybe to be first through the doors at a show at the Forum or something like that, where general admission, you want to get there early so you make sure you're up near the front of the stage. What have you camped out for, and how long have you camped out to wait for something?
And I also like to talk to anyone who's dabbling in food for the first time. I'd like to talk to them at all.
So this is your first time dabbling in food.
1-800-520-1067. Your call is coming up next.
How long have you been here camping out for your bracelet?
Since last night.
Wow.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Last night.
That's wow. Beer Mug yesterday on the streets of Hollywood talking to people who were in line, or online, as crazy Californians say it, to be the first through the doors at the brand new Chick-fil-A location in Hollywood because they got free chicken for a year. And we're talking about things you have camped out for. Hearing from a lot of people, listen to this guy, Matthew writes in on the email. I have camped out for Star Wars Episode 1, all of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, the X-Men movies, the release of the World of Warcraft expansions. This guy's just homeless, right? Isn't that what's going on? Man. He's got no place to go at night.
That's pathetic.
Love the show. Trevor writes, when Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows came out, my friends and I camped out overnight, not for the book, but for the wristband to be able to get the book the night before the book was released.
Oh, for God's sake.
See, stuff like that, books and movies and things that you can get just as easily 2 days after they come out, I just really can't wrap my head around.
Yeah.
Let's try Ryan. He's on line 8, and he'll get us started. Your phone call is at 1-800-520-1067. What have you camped out for? Ryan, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, guys. What's going on? Hey, Lisa Mick.
Hi.
Basically, I camped out for Best Buy for 2 days, and I got the idea from my buddy from the year before because of what he did. I was in dire need of some money, and exactly what happened to him happened to me. A guy came up, offered me a lot of money up front. He originally went $500 to buy my place in line.
Really?
And I said, give me $1,000, and you can have it. And he goes, and so we ended up meeting almost in the middle at $700. But at Best Buy, you get it's an hour in the store for the first, like, 45 people in line to the whole store to yourself.
Wow. Okay. You're a totally different person than the person I was expecting. I mean, you did it strictly as a business deal. You knew there was a way to make $700 for what? About 24 hours work, right?
Yeah, basically.
I'm with you, dude. I got no problems with you.
Yeah, if you really need some cash.
I didn't know that Best Buy thing. The first, how many people get 45 minutes in the store?
Yeah, it depends on the store, but it's like 45 or the first 60 people. They allow you to go in and you get like the first like 30 minutes to an hour in the store by yourself, so it's not like overly crowded.
That's impressive.
They give you a number and everything. They actually allow you to go home, go use the bathroom, go home, take a shower, go eat and everything. Huh. Because you basically spend your Thanksgiving there in lawn.
In a parking lot in the mall, exactly right. Huh. All right, great call. Thank you very much. Let's try Matt. Matt is line 7, talking about what you've camped out for. Hi, Matt. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. Good. What's up?
I camped out for a week to get Duke basketball tickets for the North Carolina game.
Oh, sure. The rivalry.
Now,
Yeah, I get. I mean, I hadn't thought about sports tickets. I mean, that's the type of thing you can buy from scalpers if you can afford it. But if you can't, those tickets are otherwise impossible to get unless you're able to get in there, right?
Well, for the North Carolina game, to be in the Duke student section, it's just for the freshmen. And so there's a whole campsite that Coach K actually goes out and visits just for that game.
Huh. Wow. Was it worth it in retrospect? Did you have a good enough time to justify camping out for a week?
It was definitely worth it. Haven't you seen the Duke Crazies on TV before?
Yep, yeah, you're one of them.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
I want to be as far away from those guys as possible, but whatever floats your boat. Yeah, thank you, dude. Appreciate that. Yeah. All right. Speaking of camping out for a week, let's try Travis, line three. Hi, Travis. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show. 7 days in line for what?
A Nintendo Wii.
Wow. A week for a Wii that you can get now in 5 minutes.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And the sad part of all was I didn't have money at the time, so my friend came down and bought the Wii. I just camped out for it, and I bought it off of him later.
That's weird. Now, was the Wii one of those things that it went on sale and then sold out and nobody could get it for 3 weeks afterwards or something? If you didn't get it day one, you didn't get it. Was that the story?
My sister called GameStop for 4 months before she finally got one.
Wow. Well, I mean, I guess if you're that excited about a video game.
You absolutely have to play baseball.
There's no other way to do that. Thank you for the call. All right, let's try Joshua, line four. By the way, am I wrong? Is it all dudes so far camping out?
No, we got Leah on line six.
All right, yeah. Get to her in a second here. Josh, what's going on, dude?
What's up, guys? How you doing, Lisa?
Good.
I'm also a first-time dabbler in food, by the way.
Oh, congratulations.
Glad you're
finally dabbling in food.
I just discovered it. I camped out for 2 days for a pair of Air Jordan sneakers that released last December. They hadn't been released in about 10 years, and then he does this. He brings them out every, like, 10 years or so, and they were very limited, so I had to camp out. They were about $180 when I got them, and now they're going for about, like, $500 to $600.
So, wow.
But do you, yeah. I mean, you can't sell them, right, because you've worn them?
No, I haven't worn them.
Oh,
I
no, Lisa.
Sell them if I really want to. It's just, like, the factor of just having them.
He's a collector.
Oh, it's a business decision.
Yeah, so it's just, like, I love sneakers, so, I mean, I didn't mind waiting for 2 days for them.
See, something that is limited edition that you can only get for a short period of time and that would never make any more, I can kind of see that if you're really into it.
But is he going to really sell them, or is he really just going to have a pair of $180 shoes?
He's going to hold on to them. It's like any collector, and eventually, if he wants to, he can sell them and make a good profit.
Yeah, eventually, right. Eventually, I might wear them if I really want to.
Don't get crazy.
Like,
yeah, don't wear sneakers. That's nuts.
No, no. You don't put shoes on your feet. What are you talking about
here?
All right.
No.
Thank you very much for the call. That does make more sense than, like, we were talking about a movie or an album that you can buy or see the next day.
Yeah.
That really does. All right, let's do one more, and this is going to be the most shocking call on this topic we've ever had. Line seven, it's going to be Sean. You won't believe, Ralph, what he waited in line for.
All right. Sean?
Hi, Sean.
Yes.
What have you waited in line for a long time?
Kevin and Bean, alcohol, not alcohol, holiday CD signing.
Kevin and Bean Christmas CD signing?
Yes.
How long did you wait?
About 12 hours.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Sean. Those crappy CDs were $8, and they were available everywhere. And they were available for weeks.
I was 14.
Still no excuse.
But by now, you've grown out of this silly show, right?
Totally.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Good man.
Good. I'm glad you just called by accident. All right, Shaw, you're a good man. We appreciate you listening all these years. Thanks so much. Well, Oscar De La Hoya, back in the news. I don't know if you saw. Finally, he has admitted that those photos we saw of him in the fishnet stockings a few years ago that he claimed were photoshopped,
yes,
they're real. They're his. And that was just the tip of the iceberg with the problems that Oscar De La Hoya has admitted to in an interview he did with Univision. And we thought we'd bring the champ on the phone, and maybe we can discuss a little bit and see how he's feeling today. Oscar, welcome back to the Kevin and Bean Show. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning, everybody. It's me, the great champion. I'm just so happy to be on the phone with you. I love you. All my best to my Mexican fans. Te quiero mucho. Hello. Great champion.
Yes.
All right. Golden boy.
Right. Yes, I understand. Were you a golden boy when you were dressed up in that hotel room in fishnet stockings, posing in boxing gloves?
People have tried to embarrass me. They tried to disparage my great reputation as a Mexican champion, because
right,
I'm very Mexican and very proud to be Mexican.
Right.
And And I've done many things that I'm not proud of, but after I've gotten clean of drugs, I've gone through the rehab, you know, I've come to the conclusion it's good for me to be honest. And that was a part of my life that I've had to come forward and be honest about. And that was a time in my life, and I'm not proud of it, but it is something that I've done. And I'm just very, very Mexican. I'm proud to be Mexican.
You
my heart
that.
Is made of avocado, right. And my soul is made of mango.
You mentioned all that. But at the time, you were saying it was Photoshop. Photoshop, absolutely not true. Now, since then, as you mentioned, you went into rehab, I believe, for alcohol and cocaine.
I went to a Mexican rehab because I'm proud to be Mexican. I'm a great champion, the golden boy.
Right,
right. And you admitted to the drugs, the cocaine, the alcohol. You also have admitted to cheating on your wife repeatedly. That's out there now, right?
Yeah, I mean, but what's the problem with that? Come on.
All right. Well, I think your wife might have a different opinion about that.
I just want to say thank you to all my Mexican fans who support me. I'm not trying to pander. It's just very important for me to tell everybody that I am, in fact, Mexican. You love me. I'm Mexican.
Right. You're pandering a lot.
Do you know how Mexican I am? Do you know how Mexican I am?
No, how?
My face is a tortilla.
Your face is not a tortilla, Oscar.
My
face
balls is made a Dodger blanket. My balls are a Dodger blanket.
That's not true. Look, we understand you're from Mexico. Everybody has already accepted that.
I was in a donkey show.
Oh, no. You don't need to continue to try to prove that, though. But look, isn't there, at some point, it seems like you're going to run out of stuff to admit to. It seems like at this point you've already told us any possible even bad thought that you've had in your life.
I have to come forward and I have to come to grips with all the bad things that I've done
right.
because of the Mexican drugs that I've done. And it's hard for me to admit this, but I'm responsible for unemployment right now.
What are you talking about? No one's even accusing you of being responsible for that.
It's true. I did it.
You didn't do it. You're making stuff up.
All right, listen, you cheated on your wife. Okay. And you admitted to it. You took the pictures. And you
killed Lincoln.
You didn't kill Lincoln.
Why would you say that? You weren't even born.
What's the point of this?
I launched the Tet Offensive.
Okay, listen, Oscar, I've never been to 12 Steps, and maybe I need to. But how much stuff are you supposed to admit to? I mean, isn't it just the stuff that you've done in your life, or do you have to pretty much account for all wrongdoing in history?
You have to be fully, relentlessly honest. You have to come to the conclusion that you are a person that has faults.
Right.
You have flaws. You have flaws.
Okay.
You have character flaws and shortcomings, and you have to come to grips with that. And that's why I'm here to say I'm sorry for writing Geely.
You didn't write Geely.
You didn't have anything to do with that movie at all.
No one even made that accusation.
I'm solely responsible for Anthony Kiedis' lyrics.
Well, somebody's got to be.
You guys know how Mexican I am?
No. How Mexican are you?
When I fart, slow jams come out.
That's awfully Mexican.
That's as Mexican as you can be. Thank you.
Oh, I'm so excited. Yet so nervous. Aren't you guys nervous?
No.
Look at that flashing light on the phone. That's Gary Busey.
You know what I'm eager to talk to?
Gary Busey.
What? Not you, but Gary Busey.
All right, before we go to the phone, real quick, let me just say this. About 3 weeks ago, somebody called claiming to be Gary Busey. We put the guy on the air, and he was hilarious. We had so much fun talking to him about Gary Busey stuff, including Celebrity Apprentice.
And that's because we had a put him immediately on the air policy here on the show, remember?
That's correct.
If Gary Busey called, you put him through immediately.
He goes on. Yes. He's welcome to come on our show whenever he wants. Then a few days after that, Gary Busey called again. Put him on the phone. Talk to him. I started having suspicions that it wasn't really Gary Busey. I enjoyed the conversations very much with the guy, but to me, I wasn't convinced it was really Gary Busey, because what are the chances a guy like Gary Busey's got nothing but time to call yahoos like us, right? So then one of our listeners who works in television production managed to get a camera and a microphone in front of Mr. Busey as he was doing another interview, and here's the conversation that ensued.
There's a lot of controversy on the Kevin and Bean radio show.
Who?
About Kevin and Bean. So I'm assuming
who?
It's not you. The Kevin and Bean radio show.
What is that?
See, it's not you. Supposedly there's somebody that calls in and says he's you. But obviously he's not you.
No, that's not me.
It's not you.
I don't know Kevin and Bean. But Kevin and Bean, if you're out there, that's not me calling you.
All right.
Now maybe they will try calling you.
Yeah, call me up. I'll prove it.
Gary Busey, welcome to the Kevin and Bean show, my friend.
For the first time.
Hello?
Hey, Gary.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
I would like to explain something to your radio audience right now.
Please.
All right. That my Twitter name is The Gary Busey.
All right.
All the other ones are falsivities.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, have you called our radio show in the last 3 weeks?
Never.
Okay.
Wow.
We've been hoodwinked.
No, I don't have your number. And
No, we're cool with that. We just want to know because somebody called with doing an impression of you, and they were doing a really good impression.
You know who that is?
No.
No.
Charlie Sheen.
All right.
Now, this is the real Gary Busey, ladies and gentlemen.
Did that answer all your invisible questions?
It did, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, sir, it did. Yes,
you
sir,
guys
it did.
Are great, man. How are you doing in this rock and roll world?
We are good.
We are doing great, Gary, and it's a thrill to have you on, and we are enjoying you so much on Celebrity Apprentice this season. Was it fun for you to do?
It's so much fun doing that. It's every morning is Christmas.
You're tired of it, right?
What?
Tired of talking about it?
What?
You heard me. Are you tired of talking about it?
No, that's why I'm on the phone with you.
Okay, all right.
That's one of the big reasons. Also, I wonder, where are you guys located?
You mean physically, where is the station?
Yeah.
It's over off Venice Boulevard in Los Angeles?
My gosh, that's great.
All right. Are you going to come down here sometime?
Am I useless then?
No. I'm saying, no. What are you talking about? No, are you going to come down to the station sometime so we can have you on the air in person as well?
Did you guys eat some speed for breakfast or did you sit in your food? You're talking like machine guns.
I'm sorry. We do talk relatively fast.
Is that producer, because you lost the bet?
I apologize.
No. Producer Alex, Kevin, and I don't know if you got the note, asked us to speak more slowly for Gary because he's still getting used to his new hearing aids.
Yeah, that's true. And Bean.
Yes. Yes, sir.
Is that your first name or your last name?
First name, Gary.
Bean.
Yes, sir.
Is it spelled B-E-A-N?
That's correct.
Well, you're nothing but protein, buddy.
That's right. He also goes by protein.
Fantastic. You're a healthy dude with a name like Bean.
Yes, I am. Gary, we wanted to ask you this. Why did it take you so long to go get help with your hearing loss? It seems like that's the type of thing you would have wanted to handle a long time ago.
Well, I thought I could do it okay by myself, and the hearing aids I got, I did get help for that. But because of my brain surgery, after a motorcycle accident I had where I split my skull wide open, hit the curb without a helmet, December 4th, 1988, they couldn't manifest the right cartridge to go in my ear canal. So Molly Madden said during the show, she looked at me and said, it's not right for somebody to be denied hearing. And she sent me to her doctor, Dr. Bill Austin, who's the number one hearing doctor in America, to the Marriott Hotel at Times Square. And I was with him for an hour and he put hearing aids in me, in my ear, and gave me some cartridges that fit in my ear and go to an iPod. And I learned that I was only using 40% of my hearing, and I was almost legally deaf.
Wow!
So she brought me a miracle and a blessing, and we talked about that last night on the show.
When your team won the challenge.
Yes.
Gary, it seems like you feel, and I don't know how this will play out in the rest of the season, but it seems like you feel like a lot of team members on your Celebrity Apprentice team are not with you.
No, they're not. They have an alliance against me, and I mentioned that last night.
And what's that about, Gary?
It's about jealousy.
How come? What are they jealous
fear.
Of?
Well, Donald Trump called me a genius twice last night.
Mm-hmm.
And I do things without externally showing what I'm doing.
Right.
And it makes people think I'm not doing anything, but I am. My mind's working very fast and very smooth and very in order so that the ABCs will be followed properly and not end up on the floor. And I did that well last night, and as you saw, and some of the stuff was cut out completely, and that's because it didn't work, and it didn't have anything to do with me. It had to do with Richard Hatch, who is now in prison again for 9 months.
Yes, he is. Yeah. Yes, he is. Yep.
Wait, he's in prison again?
Yeah, I think he loves it there. I'm going to pick up eight or nine little boyfriends who keep chasing him and wanted to play.
We know what they want to play. Yeah.
I don't know. You guys talk fast.
Gary, you said last night something that I wanted you to expand on, sir, and that is that there's no such thing as a mistake. What did you mean by that?
I think a mistake is a gift because you make a mistake and you go, wow, okay, I see what not to do now. Hey, thank you very much, mistake. And therefore, you're on your way to freedom.
But what if, like me, you keep making mistakes over and over and over again? Doesn't it? It gets depressing for me. I can tell you that.
No, that's when you're in a rut. That's when the tape loop is going around over and over again.
That's happening.
And you're addicted to your own fear, your own doubt, and your own low self-esteem unconsciously. And it didn't work that way. When you receive a mistake, you say, thank you. I won't do that again.
All right. I will try.
You learn better. You apologize to the people who were in on it with you, or how you hurt them or made them feel bad about themselves.
I will try that, Gary.
And I've learned that because I've done a lot of that in the days I was very difficult. But I'm not difficult anymore because I have a one-year-old son named Luke Sampson Busey and a beautiful soulmate, my fiance Stephanie Sampson. And we have a happy family here at where we live on the ocean in Malibu. And it's just beautiful. And it's beautiful talking to you guys, too.
Fantastic.
I'm really happy that the real Gary is talking to you now.
As are we.
Now,
and we got to get Charlie to keep quit calling you.
Sure. Now, before we go, Ralph, I know what a movie lover you are and what a fan of Mr. Busey's you are. Did you have anything you wanted to talk to him about?
Well, a huge fan, of course, of all your work, Gary. But I was really impressed last night as I watched the TV show about your definition of freedom and how you use the letters in it to define it. Could you hit that for us one more time?
Yeah, freedom. F-R-E-E-D-O-M stands for facing real, exciting energy developing out of miracles.
All right.
There it is. There it is.
And a miracle, you can bring miracles to other people if you know you have a miracle in yourself with the love you have for others. That's the golden rule. Treat others as you would have others treat you. And that's where I am now. I'm no longer difficult. The reason I was difficult was because I was difficult with myself. I couldn't get out of my own way. And I didn't know it was me stopping my flow. But we are our worst enemies. We are our own worst enemies. And the enemies you think you have on Earth, they're not enemies. They are here to show you things you need to change about yourself. So in the truth of it all, enemies are simply friends in reverse.
Friends in reverse.
Friends in reverse. You got it.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, Gary Busey on The Kevin and Bean Show. Celebrity Apprentice airs Sunday nights on NBC. Gary, the invitation is open for you to come down when you have a night or a morning that you can spare and spend some time with us in the studio.
I'll set that up with Mike Conley, my publicist. I'll come in there.
Fantastic.
And we'll dress in costumes and have a food fight.
That's exactly what I was hoping for. Thank you, Mr. Busey, for joining us on The Kevin and Bean Show, sir.
And don't forget, my real Twitter name is The Gary Busey.
All right.
The Gary Busey.
Fantastic.
Okay.
Thank you, Gary.
Bye
now. By the way, kudos to the guy who fooled us three times.
Yes.
Well done.
Well played, but when you listen to the real one, in comparison, there is no comparison, but he did do a good job the first couple times he called in, yeah.
Well done.
But there's no substitute for Busey.
That's right. There really isn't. One of our favorite guests of all time, Jay Moore, joins us next hour here on The Kevin and Bean Show, and we'll take your calls on why people hate Gwyneth Paltrow. Is it true that people are applauding when she dies in Contagion? Spoiler alert, by the way. First, though, William Shatner, who I love so much, has a new album coming out on October the 11th. It is called Seeking Major Tom. We played some clips from it yesterday, and I think the runaway fan favorite of the ones we previewed yesterday, I think, was his take on Queen's classic Bohemian Rhapsody. Listen up.
Mama just killed a man, put a gun against his head, pulled my trigger, now he's dead. Mama, life had just begun.
What's happening?
But now I've gone and thrown it all away.
Is he the only one doing this kind of spoken word type singing?
I think he is. He's so good at it. Again, October 11th is when Seeking Major Tom comes out. William Shatner joins us on the Kevin and Bean Show right now. Hey, Bill.
Kevin and Bean, how are you?
Very good.
Great.
How are you?
I couldn't be better.
Okay.
Seeking Major Tom.
Yeah.
What's the theme of this record for people who are just hearing about it for the first time, Bill?
Well, basically, it's a collection of songs about space and science.
Okay.
Things that I guess I'm known for.
Sure.
Through Star Trek and my other projects.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, yeah. And at 80-something years old, you never stop. I mean, you're working on records, it seems like, all the time, and then you're writing books, and you're directing things, and you're acting, and then you're doing commercials. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, I love it. I love it. I love to keep busy. I love to
do work that people enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I'm working on a brand new album right now. I'm in the studio as we speak.
Oh, this one hasn't even come out yet. It's not coming out till October.
I know, but I was so energized.
Okay.
By the process that I'm putting together a brand new collection of songs. In fact, it's perfect for you.
Okay.
Kevin and Bean, because it's music that has been featured on your station for many, many years.
Oh, fantastic.
Yes. Music covers of alternative rock hits.
Okay.
Calling Shatner hits or
Shatner hits. Let's just keep it with Shatner hits.
Well, we haven't decided on the title yet.
Well, you might want to consider that.
Shat hits.
Okay, that's close to making me nervous. All right, so are these songs that you are familiar with, or do you have young people who come to you and say, oh, these are popular, you should do these?
No, these are my favorites.
Your
From
favorites.
Listening to your program over the years, I've culled my favorites. Put them together on a list and then done covers of them.
I know, is this right, coming out?
I'm looking forward to you hearing them.
Yeah, well,
I want to hear your take on them, okay. What your impression is of my work.
Okay, all right.
The first song, I believe I sent you a demo copy.
You read the demo copy?
Yeah.
Okay, we have it, yes.
The first is one of my favorites, Rage Against the Machine. Killing in the Name.
Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Huh.
Shatner hits. Let's go with Shatner hits.
Let's go with Shatner hits,
I think, is
maybe
safer.
Maybe even right. William.
So that doesn't make us forget Zach, but that's an interesting take on Rage. What else did you do,
None
Bill?
One of my favorite songs that you guys play all the time.
Okay.
Harvey Danger's Flagpole Sit Up.
Okay.
Oh. All right.
Been around the world and found that only stupid people are breeding. The cretins cloning and feeding. And I don't even own a TV. They put me in the hospital for nerves, and then they had to commit me. You told them all I was crazy. They cut off my legs, and now I'm an amputee. God damn you!
All right, very nice.
How about the
very
nice. How about some Limp Bizkit? Nookie.
I'm
how
sorry?
About the nookie? How about your nookie?
Limp Bizkit?
How about some nookie?
But you're saying Limp Bizkit?
Limp Bizkit. Nookie.
I did it all for the nookie. The nookie. So you can take that cookie and stick it up your... Yeah! Stick it up your... Yeah. Stick it up your... Yeah.
I don't like that version.
You guys like Sublime?
Yeah, love.
I'm a huge Sublime fan.
I wouldn't have pegged you as such, but all right.
Date Rape.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, no, no. Come on, Bill.
That's when things got out of control. She didn't want to. He had his way. She said, let's go. He said, no way. Come on, babe. It's your lucky day. Shut your mouth. We're going to do it my way. Come on, baby. Don't be afraid. If it wasn't for date rape, I'd never get laid.
Yeah.
It's so true.
Kind of creepy hearing that from you, though. I got to be honest.
Don't say that's so true.
So very true.
Don't say that.
It wouldn't be an album of alternative hits or shat hits or shit.
Just William Shatner sings the hits is fine.
That's better.
A little Nirvana.
Oh, okay, absolutely.
With the lights out, it's less dangerous. Here we are now. Entertain us. I feel stupid. And contagious. Here we are now. Entertain us. A mulatto. An albino. A mosquito. My libido. Yeah. Yeah! 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 Yeah!
Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you very much, fellas. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Still can't believe those are the words. So Seeking Major Tom comes out October 11th, and then we'll see the new alternative hits album sometime after that. William Shatner sings the hits. Right. I think. Okay. We gotta go.
We do have
to. We are absolutely not worthy on a Friday Kevin and Bean show to welcome the great Danny McBride back to the show, but he joins us.
Thank you.
Studio.
Thank you.
How are you, Your Highness?
I'm doing really good. I'm glad to be here.
No, you're not the highness in your highness.
No, no. No. I'm the lowness in your highness. Yeah. Yeah.
Danny, we have so many things. I know you've got a few minutes to spend with us. We have so many things we want to get caught up on with you because it's been a while since we talked to you. But let's start with your highness. Let's get the business out of the way.
Okay.
Because that's why you're here. This is one of yours, man. This one comes straight from the heart. You co-wrote this thing, right?
Yeah, you know, I co-wrote this with Ben Best, who's one of the creators of Eastbound and Down. He plays Clegg, the bartender, in that show. And David Green is an old friend of mine. He's the director. He directed Pineapple Express. I went to film school with David, and he also directs a bunch of episodes on Eastbound. So, yeah, this was just a bunch of friends kind of getting together, putting on armor, and killing things in Belfast, Northern Ireland.
What a great premise, because I don't think I've ever seen a parody of those sword and sorcery sort of night tale movies before. This is an original.
Yeah, that's what we thought, too. You know, those sort of films like Conan, Beastmaster, Kroll, those things were, like, huge when I was a kid.
Yeah.
It was, like, you know, really captured my imagination. And we hadn't really seen anyone take a stab at those recently. Mm-mm. So, you know, we just wanted to kind of pay homage to those films and try to figure out, like, our own sort of angle into that genre.
Man, I haven't heard the word Kroll in a long time. I totally forgot that
that
existed.
Thing he threw, that
the
was
glaive.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, the glaive. Love that thing.
So when you're wearing a lot of hats when you're making a movie like this because you're acting in it and you're writing. Or you're not directing this time around, right?
No. Okay. I leave that to people who can do those things.
Did you have? Were you involved in the great cast that you put together with Franco and Natalie Portman and Zoe and everybody?
Yeah. You know, I'm lucky enough. You know, David, who directed it, is you know we've worked together a bunch before. So I'm lucky enough that he like allows me into a lot of these like moments where we, a lot of collaboration. So yeah, I have a hand in all that casting. And Franco, we work with on Pineapple Express. So we were looking for something to work with him again on because he's just such a great dude. And I was shocked that Natalie wanted to be involved with the film.
It is a little odd that an actress of her caliber would do something so sort of goofy and fun.
Well, when you meet her, you kind of get it because she, she's an amazing actress, but she also has like a really incredible sense of humor. She doesn't take herself too seriously at all. And
quite the stoner too, I've heard, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah. Did it bum you out when you realized that she was having sex with somebody else in the cast on Black Swan, but she didn't do that when you were making your movie together? I mean, come on. If she's giving it up, I'm over here.
You know, my wife was there on the set, so I figured it was for the best.
What were you thinking? You're working Natalie Portman and having your wife on the set.
Well, this was the
bad
movie she did right before Black Swan. This was like she came here for that, so... You know, I'm not going to say I had a hand in that, you know, Academy Award-winning performance, but maybe I got her warmed up for it, at least.
Right. Something rubbed off on her. Yeah. Something right.
Yeah.
She had at least let you borrow the Oscar 2 weeks a year or something like that. All right, take me back to film school. You said you went to film school with your director? You guys go that far back together?
Yeah, you know, my freshman year of college, we went to the North Carolina School of the Arts, this little film school in North Carolina. And, on the freshman dorm, my next-door neighbor was David Green, who directed this, and then Jody Hill, who directs a lot of Eastbound Down. So I met those guys when...
Friends for life, right there from
Friends
that,
for life, yeah.
From that semester.
Still drinking beer with the same guys I was when I was 18 years old.
And I want to hear, what were the conversations like when you guys were sitting around, just barely getting into the business, just trying to, you know, claw your way in and learn what you needed to learn to get started, move to Hollywood? What were your dreams? Where did you imagine your careers would go?
It was a lot of talk back then. This kind of movie, like Your Highness, was exactly the kind of stuff we were talking about of like, let's just try to make these crazy movies that nobody else is trying to make and the kind of thing that we really would just want to see and the kind of movies that we were influenced by. And that's what's nuts about this movie is it literally just feels exactly like what we've kind of always wanted to get our hands in.
Was your plan always, I'm going to be a movie star?
No, it wasn't at all. I went to that school to focus on like writing and directing, and we didn't really know any actors, so we would just put ourselves in each other's like short films, and so that's kind of how all this began. But no,
so
I had
like
no
Foot
idea.
Fist Way, you said I'll play the lead just because we really don't know have anybody else to do it.
Exactly, Jody Hill, who directed that, came to me and was like, you know, I don't, you know, let's write this together, and you be in it because you know I don't want to go audition people that I don't know, and we just honestly don't know how to work with actors, so we just put ourselves in there.
Explaining, I guess, when you already know each other.
Yeah, right. Was there ever any talk, and I don't at all mean this with negative connotation, so please don't take it that way, but was there ever any talk, hey, can I be an actor? Look at me. Did you ever think about that?
Oh, Bean. You know what?
No, you know what I'm saying?
Anytime Bean starts a sentence with, oh, don't take this the wrong way, I guarantee
it's
going to be a
because
slammed.
I'm so good-looking that it would be distracting.
Right.
That was
my point exactly, right.
Well, you know.
Because clothes just fall off of the women when the great Danny McBride walks in. That's my fear.
Well, you know, you know, there's many different types of stories, and everyone who has to be in those stories doesn't always have to be that attractive. You know, they can look like normal dudes. But, you know, that was part of the reason why we pulled Franco into this movie, is because I'm so stunningly handsome that we really wanted to balance it out and make it realistic.
Ground it.
We pull Franco in. Yeah,
it's a good idea.
Right. Yeah,
because it'd be too tough for the audience to see nothing but models running around on the screen there.
Exactly.
Right. So now, you bring in Franco to dog it up a little bit.
We've been playing clips from the movie all week long, and we've been talking about it. And as I listen to your British accent, would you say that is a strong suit of yours, the British accent, or is it something maybe you're new to?
You know, I wouldn't even call it a British accent. I wouldn't want to insult the people of England that way. But, you know, when you watch these old fantasy films, terrible accents kind of are par for the course. And so I'll just write my bad accent off to that I was really trying to make this authentic.
You're being true to the genre.
True to the genre.
I understand.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay.
I just can't believe you didn't go ahead and cast Kevin Costner and Keanu Reeves in the movie. I mean, if that's what we're going for, they're available, right?
Yeah. Well, they were unavailable, unfortunately, for us. Yeah.
The film is called Your Highness. It opens up everywhere today. And again, besides the fact that I see Danny McBride's name in the credits, and I got to go anyway. What a great cast! James Franco was in there. Justin Theroux, who I know is a great writer and is also he doesn't act enough for my taste. He's great. Zooey Deschanel. Who does she play in the movie, by the way? I haven't seen much of her in the trailers.
Zooey Deschanel plays Franco's bride to be. She gets captured by Justin Theroux's character, so she's actually the one that we're on the quest to save.
Ah, yeah. She's awesome. She seems like she'd be so much fun, too.
She's incredible. The first movie I ever did, All the Real Girls, I acted with her in that. And she's great. And she's so beautiful and has such a great voice. She sings in this movie. So we're getting to, you know, work with a lot of very talented people.
All of that and, of course, Oscar winner Natalie Portman in the movie called Your Highness opening everywhere today. We have many more questions with the great Danny McBride. And we'll do that when we return right after this on The Kevin DeBean Show. Danny McBride in studio with us here on the Kevin DeBean Show, talking about his new film called Your Highness that opens up everywhere today. We want to move on and talk about Eastbound and Down and the Beastie Boys video and some other stuff. But real quick, because I think we forgot last time, here's a clip from Your Highness with Danny McBride.
He was captured.
Yes, we got into a huge sword fight and we were able to escape and he was not.
I know how you're feeling inside, as if you cannot rest until you destroy those who harmed your family. You need to skin them alive and wear their flesh as a cape as you dance around their convulsing corpses.
Yes, of course. Yes. Yes.
That sounds so funny. Speaking of Eastbound and Down, Danny, you told us off air that you're currently writing the third season. The show is coming back. Is it true that I hear that your plan is maybe just one more and then you're out?
Yeah, you know, when we set the show up, we always saw it as like, you know, a very small arc, something that we would kind of keep tight, not let it have a chance to get old. And so we've always been kind of plotting it out to be like a three, you know, sort of like a three act structure, each season being a different act. And so, you know, we're in the third season now, and this is always what we kind of saw as the end, and we kind of knew where it was heading. And so we're approaching the season that way, but at the end of the day, who knows? I mean, we really like working on the show. It's a lot of fun. So,
yeah,
you know,
when they
we'll
back
say.
The truck up with all the money in it and
yeah.
the tractor trailer.
It's like, oh, no, 10 more seasons.
we have some other plot points we didn't quite explore yet. Okay.
What are you doing to your hair in season 3? Because I really feel for you as a person when you're not on the set with some of the Kenny Powers hair that you got to walk around with.
Yeah, the person you should feel for is my wife who has to live with me with cornrows and all that. Yeah,
the perm.
Yeah, it's terrible. I wish it was a perm. This is what the good Lord gave me.
The real deal right there.
That is it. And by the way, one more note on this, because I do love the show and we've talked to you about it a couple times in the past. There are people out there who don't watch Kenny Powers to laugh at him. They watch Kenny Powers because they love him and want to be him. Don't you run into people like that who just think that Kenny Powers is the man and, wow, I wish I could be like that guy?
I do, indeed. I mean, I think there's people who watch the show who get the joke, and I think there's people who watch the show and they're looking for life lessons, you know? And I'll embrace both of those fans easily.
It's their favorite documentary. Yeah. If they love that. Yeah.
Kenny Powers is really like the real-life Charlie Sheen when you think about it. He's just like, you know, just flamethrowers. Everything that's not 100% on the earth to make his life better, he doesn't care about.
Yeah, I'll second that, sure, yeah.
Ralph gave some news in the Showbiz report earlier on today, some personal news from you that you broke on Conan this week. Congratulations. Tell us about that, man.
Yeah, it looks like I'm going to be a dad. Me and my wife are expecting a baby this fall.
Congratulations.
Very exciting.
Thank you.
And you're reasonably sure that's yours, right?
You know, I'm hoping on it. We'll see what happens when the baby pops out, yeah. You know.
Because you're on the road a lot of location shoots and stuff like that. Yeah. You're away from home quite a bit.
Yeah, it could be tricky. We'll see. I think the hair will be the telling feature. We'll be able to kind of know from that.
Unless it's Will Ferrell's.
Yeah.
And then, you know, similar.
Blonde, yeah.
John C. Reilly could be John C. Reilly's baby, too. Geez, you ever think about that?
I'm sorry.
Sorry to give you the doubt, but it's possible.
I was excited. I would hire a lawyer.
I want to see Danny on Maury when he finds out he is or is not.
Baby is not yours.
All right. Speaking of Will and John C. Reilly, we had King Ad-Rock on from the Beastie Boys yesterday talking about their new album that's coming out in May and then the accompanying video, the 30-minute video that looks like the greatest movie ever made. You guys are all in it. Elijah Wood, Susan Sarandon, Steve Buscemi. The list just goes on and on.
Jack Black. What a cast.
Jack Black. How did this thing come about? How did you end up in a Beastie Boys movie? Who did you know?
You know, I met Adam Yauch on a flight on the way to shoot Your Highness, and I was a huge Beastie Boys fan since I was a kid, and we hit it off there. And about a year later, he called me and said, "We're going to get together this music video. We want to do a sequel to the Fight for Your Right to Party video." And I literally like dropped the phone. It was to me the coolest thing I'd ever been offered before. And it was crazy. It was like a 3-day shoot, and Seth Rogen and Elijah Wood and myself play the Beastie Boys, and then we encountered these alternate versions of them played by Will Ferrell and Jack Black and John C. Reilly, and it was insane. It literally is the craziest thing I think I've ever done before. It was so much fun.
And the clip that they show that we put up at KevinAbean.com is just a teaser for the long-form video, but I'm having trouble understanding what's going on in the thing. I mean, I just
explain
see you guys,
the narrative for us.
You guys
are
running
please.
Around a lot, screaming at people. What's happening?
You know, I would equate it to something like the Thriller video, which, you know, there was like the big party from Fight to Your Right to Party, and it's just these guys kind of stumble around the city drunk, encountering all these different people from the Beastie Boys mythology, and... Yeah, and then getting into a humongous dance contest.
Were you in Sundance when they debuted it?
Yeah, I was there.
It went
yeah.
over pretty large from my
yeah,
understanding.
Yeah, it was awesome.
That's awesome.
I mean, if you're going to be in anyone's music video, I mean, the Beastie Boys are the gold standard for music videos. I mean, they have always made phenomenal videos, and I guess that's because, you know, those guys really have, you know, they've got film talent in addition to music talent, too.
Oh, yeah, those guys are brilliant. Doing. They're super smart, and also the Beastie Boys videos are so distinct. Like, the moment that they put, like, a fisheye lens on a low camera, and you have that, you know, the hats and the leather jacket on, and you're just like waving your hands in the air and rapping into the lens. It just looks so surreal. Like, I'm a Beastie Boy. I can finish working now.
I can't wait to see the whole thing, and it's going to be on the deluxe edition of the Hot Sauce Committee Volume 2 when it comes out. So I'm really excited about that. You must feel like the king of Hollywood right now, Danny. It sounds to me like you're getting to do everything that you want to do in show business right now.
I wouldn't say I'm the king. Maybe like a jester or, you know.
A duke, maybe?
A duke of Hollywood is good. I'm at a place where I've been lucky enough to be able to, like, work on projects that I really like and work with people that I really like. And, you know, at the end of the day, that's pretty awesome. That's, that's pretty cool. I dig it.
What's next in the pipeline for you? What's the next project, you guys? Besides Eastbound and Down, you got another feature or something?
Yeah, we're doing Eastbound and Down now. And this summer, this movie comes out called 30 Minutes or Less that Ruben Fleischer, who directed Zombieland, directed. And it's starring Aziz Ansari, Jesse Eisenberg, Nick Swardson, and myself. And that comes out in August. And I'm a bad guy in Kung Fu Panda 2. And then I guess I'll be changing diapers this fall. We'll see what happens.
Well, Danny, you got it going on, and I know how busy you are. It always means a lot to you that you make time for the Kevin and Bean Show. It's always great to catch up with you. And have fun in Europe. Danny's leaving for Europe almost right after this interview to go talk about the movie over there.
He's going to the UK, and I will be interested to hear the reception for the accent, quite frankly.
I think they'll appreciate its authenticity.
Yeah? Okay. All right. We'll see.
Your Highness is the movie opening up everywhere today. Danny, thanks a lot for coming in, man. We enjoyed it.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
Actress Kat Dennings joins us on the show coming up in just a few minutes here on the Kevin and Bean Show. She, of course, is in that Two Broke Girls program on Monday night. By the way, it's going to be interesting to see what happens tonight, because last week, I'm sure all of America watched, because it was on right after the 2.5 Men premiere.
That's mm-hmm.
So,
oh, I see. Yep.
Huge, huge lead-in audience. I don't think that's the case starting tonight, so we'll see how it does. Right now, though, we want to talk about something on the Kevin and Bean Show that comes up about once a year on the program, and that is, you can't believe you injured yourself in such a stupid way.
And it happens to everybody. Kevin claims it happens more to me than anybody else.
Oh, it does. The stuff
that I don't know if that's true.
The stuff that happens once every 10 years to normal people happens to Bean once a month.
Maybe not once a month. True.
Maybe 6 times a year. Maybe once.
I was walking down the stairs and smashed my head against the wall that's above the stairs. I did knock myself out doing that, and I did it one time. And I can't remember how I did it, but I also hit my head on the garage door one time and got knocked out. I've had concussions both times as a result of that. And I think some of that is that I'm 1,100 feet tall, so I do tend to hit things with my head
and kind of gawky. And DJ Spina Bifida. He also got stuck in a truck window one time, and he
didn't get hurt though.
But we had to literally take the truck window out of the truck so that Bean could stand up and walk around with the truck window around his waist.
I was trying to help a guy out by reaching in because he locked his keys in the car. That was me being a good Samaritan. That wasn't me doing something stupid.
No, it was me trying to help somebody.
Nope,
it's not. This is not you were doing something stupid. It's that you're embarrassed how you got hurt. You did it in an embarrassing way. Like, I'll give you a perfect example. We were at the Super Bowl in Florida. I think it was Miami. At the Super Bowl, we were there. We had tickets to the game. It was game day. It was time to go to the Super Bowl. One of the biggest events in the country.
Yes.
And Bean calls and says, "Hey, I'm in the hospital." And I say, "What are you talking about?" He said, I was putting on my pants and my back went out. I said, "Just putting on your pants, your back went out?" He's in so much pain. So I just took it. I went to the hospital. I was like, "I'm not missing the Super Bowl. Sorry, dude." So I took his ticket and I scalped it and gave him the money. But
there
you
go.
But I went because you don't miss the Super Bowl for that.
Of course not.
This was Tampa, by the way, is where it happened. Okay. Wasn't this the Super Bowl where your cousin was playing, where Jeff Hostetter was playing for the Giants, if I recall correctly?
My cousin that had never spoken to me before and has not spoken to me since.
But you know what it's like when you have a back injury. And I was in a terrible car accident when I was a teenager, and I've had a back injury my whole life. And it doesn't take anything to throw your back out. That's not even – I mean, there's not much you can do about that short of, I don't know, some sort of strengthening exercises that I refuse to do.
Well, what about, like, the moped? Was it
okay, let's not keep going on with me. Let's move on to other people
here. Let me tell the moped story. This is funny. We were in – it wasn't the Bahamas. It was off the East Coast. Bermuda. Yeah, we were in Bermuda, and we got mopeds. And Bean had never ridden one, and he's 6'11" or whatever. And a moped is not for him, but he'd never ridden one, so this guy was going to teach him how to do it. So he gets on the moped, and there's a brick wall that's going down the side of the street. Somehow Bean gets – drawn like a magnet over to the brick wall. I don't know how he got over there, but he got too close to get away, but not close enough to stop. So basically, he was just scraping the entire left side of his body, and I think the adrenaline rush made him goose it a little bit so that he just kept going and going. I was like, this is one of the – I was literally on the ground laughing, as was the guy from the scooter store. And poor B was bleeding like a pig. Oh, it was so funny.
I think I went about 250 miles alongside that brick wall.
Honestly,
until I ran out of gas, by the way.
He couldn't stop.
We're going to go to you, Erica, and you, Tim, in just one second. Please don't hang up. But let me tell you what brought this back to our attention, the embarrassing ways that you got injured. Two things. One, Oscar-winning actress Halle Berry is in Spain filming a movie called Cloud Atlas. Hope the movie is better than the title. She is taking a break from filming when she somehow hurts herself walking and breaks her foot. Now has her foot in a cast, walking. I don't know if she just tripped on a rock or something like that, but she was walking down the street and then ended up breaking her foot.
She wasn't jogging. She wasn't running.
Exactly.
Wow.
She was walking. So that's thing A. Thing B, the beautiful actress Kristen Chenoweth, who, of course, you see on Glee and a million movies. She's a Broadway star. She did an interview recently about how she got injured. And listen to this tape, and I think you'll find it very funny, and you'll also find it very embarrassing that this is what hurt her.
A recent lesson I learned was if you're walking down concrete stairs in slippers that have no tread on the bottom, hold on to the handrail. Otherwise, you'll do the cooter smash, a.k.a. break your coccyx. That's what happened to me.
See, because she's in coccyx. See, you don't expect to get injured walking down the stairs in a pair of slippers. She wasn't out on a jet ski. She wasn't riding a tiger. She was just walking down the stairs.
Now, does drunk count?
Because drunk accounts for a whole group of these kinds of injuries. What? Like, I was running upstairs drunk and had my hands in my coat pocket and tripped and couldn't get my hands out and broke my nose.
But I think that counts.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, because I think that because that's like, embarrassing and simple. That you should not get hurt walking upstairs.
Running. I was running, so I had a lot of speed so that when my face broke my fall on the step and my nose was broken.
I want to go to Erica first. She's on line one. I mostly want to go to her first because she was naked when she got hurt. Right. I want to hear this story. Erica, welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show. Thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. Good morning.
Hi. Embarrassing ways you hurt yourself.
I was tanning.
Mm-hmm. Tanning. You were tanning.
I was tanning. So okay. I had applied lotion and I was naked. And I'm not trying to be like sexy and cute about this.
No,
story.
Go ahead. Take your time.
You say that like it's a negative.
The shame and humiliation I felt. So I just put on my lotion, I laid in bed, and I threw my back out.
Tanning bed.
Getting in the tanning bed?
Laying down in the tanning bed, completely threw my back out.
Oh my God, so what do you do in that instance? You have to call somebody to come help you, right?
Well, first I waited 15 minutes and tanned.
Sweet, you gotta get the tan.
I gotta get my tan on, right?
Right.
And then I didn't know what to do, so I started to roll myself, kind of like throw my momentum both ways.
It was nice. It was any
myself out of the bed.
So it was anything but call somebody to help because you were naked and you hurt yourself.
Well, I had to crawl to my phone on the floor. Sweet. And I called my best friend. She brought me a robe.
They're like, "You're done. Can you please leave the room?"
She had third-degree burns.
You're done.
Oh,
she would get out.
And she brought me a Vicodin as well, so I could make it out. Okay. Right.
So you were hurting so much you couldn't even get dressed with the clothes that you brought with you, right?
No.
Yeah. Look, I've been there. I threw my back out once getting out of my car and just had to sit there and just weep until somebody came to help me a few years ago. I mean, so it hurts so bad you can't move.
You just weeped.
You can't. Well, there's nothing else you can do but cry. That's all there is to it.
You cannot cry. I get the idea. Erica didn't cry.
If it hurts that bad, though, you just can't. Erica, great call. Thank you very much.
Thank
we appreciate
you.
It.
Have
Thank
a great
you.
Morning.
You too.
She was... She was naked, she said.
That's what
happened,
we need.
Right?
We just need let's just change this to people who were naked.
Whatever you were doing when you were naked. All right, Tim, you hang on. Ryan, hang on. Vince, hang on. How did you hurt yourself in an embarrassing way? We want to talk to you. 1-800-520-1067. Your call is coming up at the Kevin and Bean Show.
Hey!
106.7 K-Rock is KROQ. It's 26 minutes after 7 o'clock.
Oh, this is going to be so much fun because it's not about me this time. We're talking about embarrassing ways you injured yourself here on the Kevin and Bean Show. I guess I'm sort of the king of it. But we'll go to your calls in a moment. Jason writes in, when I was 12, my parents decided to take us to the snow. I was so excited. I went into my room to change, and then I opened the door and mooned my brother. As I bent over to moon him, I smashed my face on a metal chair. So instead of going to the snow like we were looking forward to, we ended up in the hospital instead, and I got me some stitches across my eye. Epic fail. Here's one more. Chad writes in from the Kevin Bean Facebook page. I dislocated my shoulder shaking a vending machine trying to get the M&Ms that didn't fully rotate out.
Love it.
You're trying to save 50 cents by getting the M&Ms out. You dislocate your shoulder.
No, he paid, Bean. He paid and it didn't quite get out. That's
I'm
not
sure
right.
That's what happened. All right. Let's go to Tim now. Line 3, 1-800-520-1067. Embarrassing ways you injured yourself. Hi, Tim. You're on.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Hey, well, sadly, I wasn't naked, and surprisingly, I wasn't drunk.
All right.
I was playing miniature golf.
Miniature golf?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise
known as putt-putt.
Yes, putt-putt golf.
All right.
It was glow-in-the-dark putt-putt golf.
All right.
So all the floor was black, and everything was glow-in-the-dark.
What could you injure doing that?
Well, the floor was dark. I couldn't see the floor very well, and there was a step, and I didn't see the step. And I severely, severely sprained my ankle to the point where I had to go to the hospital, get crutches, and a cast thing on my ankle, which is the worst thing in the world because you don't want to go to work the next day and say, how did you injure yourself?
Well, no, you make up a different story. You don't tell that one.
You can say playing golf, right?
No!
Just say playing golf and I got hit by lightning.
Hit by lightning.
That's how I sprained my ankle. I got hit by lightning.
Thank you for the call.
All right. That may be the first and only injury in the history of putt-putt golf. Let's try, we got some really good ones. Let's try Shirley. Shirley's on line 2 here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hi, Shirley. Thanks a lot for calling. What happened to you?
I was walking in the parking lot and slipped and fell on a banana peel.
Oh,
the old
not.
Banana peel. Nice. She's doing a movie gag.
It's just like the cartoons where you see, do that little dance.
Sure.
And you know, I'm flat on my back.
Sweet.
Totally embarrassed. They want to call 911, and I'm like, no.
But the first thing you did, and correct me if I'm wrong, the first thing you did was look around to see who saw.
Oh, they saw.
Oh, everyone saw, right?
That's awesome. Yeah. I didn't know that really happened with the banana peels. I thought that was just in the cartoons. Thank you for the call. Let's try Vince. Vince got injured by his own dog. He's on line 5. Hi, Vince. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show.
Good morning, Kevin and Bean. Good morning, this is May.
Good morning.
How'd your dog injure you?
Well, he gets really excited when I take him for a walk, so I decided to take him for a walk. I kneeled down to put his leash on. He jumped, and he hits my nose and busts my nose, broke the nose. So
your dog headbutted you. What a dog.
Yeah.
He headbutted you.
That's fantastic.
Sweet.
Thank you for the call. Let's try Tiffany, line 8, talking about embarrassing ways you injured yourself. Tiffany, I love this story. Tell us.
So I was actually at work. I worked for the sheriff's department at the time, and I was driving around town, and somebody thought it would be a good idea to brake check a police officer's car.
Good.
And I had to honk my horn. When I went to honk my horn, I dislocated my shoulder.
What?
I got a
Wait a minute. Tiffany, was it injured before? Because I know once you, you know, hurt your shoulder, dislocate your shoulder, sometimes it's that way for life. It falls out all the time.
Yeah, I dislocated it when I was a kid.
Okay. All right. Good. Because
that's fantastic.
You, that's great. Honking your horn.
How much honking were you doing?
Did you lie?
In a sheriff's car and I get brake checked.
Did you lie when you went back to the sheriff's station?
Did I lie? No, I was so embarrassed.
Sweet. All right.
Don't you think, by the way, that don't you think the person wasn't so much trying to brake check you as they were trying to slow down because they thought you might give them a ticket if they were going too fast?
It's possible.
Does it matter? We're missing the point that she dislocated her shoulder honking her horn.
Tiffany, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Hey, Kevin and Bean, Raul writes in, when I was much younger, my hot neighbor asked me to knock down a wasp nest for her. I started throwing rocks at the nest. When I finally hit it, well, forgetting my hot neighbor was there, I started running and screaming like a little girl when the wasp started to fly toward me. Two steps later, I fell down, bending my fingers all the way backwards. Not only did my hand end up looking like Hamburger Helper, but then I got stung by both wasps, all this in front of a hot neighbor that I was trying to impress. Raul, you are the most embarrassing injury of the day. Congratulations.
We saw that Cage the Elephant Band over the weekend, and let me tell you, they are on something or spastic or high or something or having
all
a seizure.
Of the above.
I mean, the bizarre, crazy energy from that group. But that's a good tune right there. Bad Religion on the way. Also, the Foster the People Pumped Up Kick song and some Rage Against the Machine this hour on the Kevin and Bean Show. It is Monday. Thanks for tuning in. Our man Omar joins us in the studio. Let me tell you something about Omar. Now, this is Bean speaking. I hate the people, right?
Yeah.
Omar and I chatted on Saturday, had an actual conversation.
We did, yeah. We hung
and,
out.
And it was okay.
Oh, thank you. It was okay. Wow. Thanks, for Bean.
For Bean, that's a glowing review.
That is true.
It was all right.
Yeah.
That's what I say.
How long was it, Omar, and how long did it seem?
it was only about 2 minutes. It seemed like 2 hours.
How dare you.
Yeah.
But Omar was very excited because we were at a hotel that was also hosting the Califur Convention, which is the California Furries. And this is an annual deal, and I guess they have them all over the country. And this is a big deal for people who dress up. What's the word?
Oh, I don't know how to pronounce that.
No one help him.
For sure.
Nobody help him. What are they, Bean? What are they?
I can't think of the
What's
word.
What's the name?
But anyway.
What does it sound like? What's the name sound like?
They dress up in like mascot costumes. And we were trying to figure out, is this a sexual turn-on for them? Or is this just role-playing so that they can like leave their dumb personalities behind?
Yeah.
And Omar, I guess, was the guy on the case to discover it for
Let
us.
Let me ask this question before Omar goes.
Yeah.
How unlikely is it? Because Omar has cartoon hate.
Right. For everything.
For things that are just average. Like, no one hates them except for Omar.
Right.
He gets to the furries, and all of a sudden, he's super interested.
Yeah, absolutely. And these guys are cool, dude.
And he doesn't want to make fun of them.
No. Yeah.
And he doesn't want to mock them.
Yeah.
What's happening here?
That is true. I don't know what happened. But, you know, they have such a sense of, belong there, and then that's why they do it, because they come together with people like themselves.
Yeah.
And, why am I going to fault them for that, you know?
Because you,
you fault everybody for everything.
you would poop on a nun because of her sense of belonging with the Lord. I mean, it just
that's true. Well, anyone the Lord's who's BS, not
like
dude.
You, right? That's what I'm saying. Anyone who's not like you, you automatically have cartoon hate for.
You know what that means. You know what that means?
Is that Omar is secretly a furry?
Yeah, how dare you?
He used to wear mesh, didn't you? Didn't you used to wear mesh?
I did. Tell me. I did.
These are his people.
Yeah. What do we need to know about these the series of interviews that we're about to hear?
The only thing you need to know is that, you know, I interviewed a lot of different people, people in costumes, people who were working on staff, and, you know, basically I just went around and tried to find out what it was really about.
It's a chance to get in costume and run around and, you know, be this character for a few hours and entertain people and make people laugh and smile. And it's just fun.
Everybody's pretty open, you know. They don't shun people. It's not about fitting in. It's just being yourself. Everybody accepts you. Like, you don't have to worry about, oh, can I be myself or do I have to change to fit in?
Do you like your man Harry?
Yes.
So your man has a big ball fro? Do you guys both go El Natural?
No, not entirely. There's got to be some grooming, yeah.
Why is it that there's not a lot of female in the fandom?
It's a place for a lot of guys to feel safe. You know, in Western society, it's not cool to run around and go, you know, hey, look at me. I'm running around in a fursuit and a costume, you know, acting like a 12-year-old kid. So it's a good place for a lot of guys to just run around, act out their inner child, have a good time, and then go back to the real world.
Are you currently dating another furry?
This is actually my boyfriend right here.
Do you guys, you know, make whoopee using the costumes?
No.
No. Is that a bad thing?
That would be a horrendous amount of static.
No, unfortunately, the percentage that people think that furries actually will have, like, a sex party in their suits, it's actually a very small number. It's only about 7, maybe 6%.
What's the drug consumption around here?
We are strictly drug prohibited.
Bogus! I am out!
No, you're not. For one reason. The drug that you like to say is going on here, no, it's just feeling like we're welcome here.
You know, feeling welcome is overrated, dude. Give me some ecstasy, give me some heroin. I want something.
There is one side to the fandom, though, that is called the 421st.
Where are they at? Let's go. What is yiffing?
Yiffing started out as a term used for young, incredibly effable fox.
Where are the yips at? I think it's a panda with a hula skirt. Could you speak through that thing?
Maybe.
Okay, it's a dude. I thought it was a chick. It's oddly very alluring, and he's touching me very inappropriately right now. He has a far away. Are you yiffing me?
Would you like me to?
I think I'm getting yiffed. There's so many reasons why people become furries. What's your main reason?
Actually, I have Asperger's syndrome and is a very...
You know what? I have a friend who has Asperger's and you know what? I mean, but his thing is sheep. He really wants a sheep. Do you know any furry costumes that are dressing up in sheep here today?
I have not seen one.
What attracts you to the fandom?
Yeah, cute fuzzy things.
I have a cute fuzzy thing. And I'm Middle Eastern. I'm hairy all over.
That is lovely to know.
It's not a sexual thing whatsoever.
How often are you having sex?
Very, very seldom, because it's not the focus of the relationship. The relationship is with a friend of mine online. We have a relationship going in a role play. It's not a relationship between us. We have a relationship between our characters. But that's the only thing closest to a relationship that I have right now.
So it's two male characters. So I'm correct in saying that you're gay?
I'm wondering. But the characters, yes. The characters, yes, they are. Okay.
Yeah, that guy at the end was magic, dude.
My head is spinning with confusion over that.
You should have just settled it for him, Omar. You just said, look, it's cool. Just say you're gay. That's fine. No one cares.
I know.
Those are great interviews, first of all. But here's what I don't get. This is what I was asking Omar on Saturday. Where are the hot regular people who it just happen to enjoy this role playing, this
there
character
aren't
playing?
Any.
But there have to be.
Yeah, that's what you would think.
There aren't none, dude. And they're all because like 90% fat, dude.
90% are Dungeons and Dragons in the basement. This is the only time I ever interact with people where I don't get the crap beaten out of me.
I like that it's pretty acceptable. That I don't get made fun of when I'm going out in public and everybody seems to like me. And Omar.
Really, this is the first. But is this the first thing Omar has ever accepted?
Yes, it is.
Maybe. But here's why Omar can't be a furry. He's a good-looking dude. It would be impossible.
Well, if he gained weight,
if he were a furry, he would be the best-looking furry in history.
He can gain weight. He can gain like if he gained 100 pounds, he could be a furry.
I'm gonna go start
and by the way, how many women were there? Because I would have guessed they were all dudes.
You know, it's probably like 95% dudes, 5% chicks. Yeah.
All those chicks just must be so lonely. You'd think they'd be like this, the focus of the whole thing, and they'd have their pick of men.
No.
But I think the guys, even in character, did not have the self-confidence to approach women, though. The girls that I saw, it seemed like they were, you know, they were not being approached. So
I think next time this investigation needs to go from the inside. And I think Omar, we need Omar a full costume. Oh, please, like you would love that, Omar.
I'm in.
All right, Lisa, tell me about the guy that you talked to. What was he wearing?
Oh, my sherbet colored dog.
Okay, so you went over. Yeah. You wanted to pet the dog.
Yeah, and, I wanted to pet the dog. I took a picture and I put my hand on his shoulder. He was like soaking wet. But I mean, it was a cool costume. And I said, "Wow, look, you're really sweating in there." And he's like, "Yes, I am. It's very hot." And it just ruined the whole thing.
Did he say that's not sweat?
Gross.
Good times. Nice job, Omar. That's so tender and beautiful at the end there. I almost teared up a little bit. Hey, thanks for listening to the Kevin and Bean Show on a Friday. Looking ahead toward Monday, by the way, big announcement. The latest Breakfast with Big Band Tiny Place. You can be there and help us interview the band as they play live. That's coming. Also, actor Hugh Laurie from the TV show House is going to be with us on Monday. Jason Schwartzman stops by. And we'll have Andrew Siciliano from DirecTV Red Zone. He's coming in, too, to break down what we see this weekend in the NFL.
Hey, Bean.
Yes. What?
We got Evangeline Lilly on the line.
Well, I know. Just
you're
to tell
flapping
them,
your gums.
Yeah, you need
just
to
telling people
talking.
About Monday. About I just because I got a big
that?
Show. I want people
Why
to come.
Why don't you do less of that and more of talking to Evangeline Lilly?
Because my fear is, hi, Evangeline Lilly. Welcome to the Kevin and Bean Show, my dear.
Don't worry, I'm very excited about Monday too.
See, there you go. Thank you. And I'll tell you why, Kevin. Here's my fear. They hear we have Evangeline Lilly on and they go, well, that's it. Once that interview's over, I'll never listen to the Kevin and Bean Show again. What's the point of tuning in again after that? I just want to make sure they know there's...
Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What kind of horrible interview do you think I'm going to give?
No, it's not you, it's us.
It's that we
peaked. No.
It's that they think we have nothing good to offer because we've already peaked. It's Christmas morning having you on. Now everything else is just bad.
Now
so
it's the day after and we got to take everything back.
Exactly. Well, first of all, welcome back to the Kevin and Bean Show. It's been a long time since we talked to you. How are you?
I'm wonderful.
You have been in New Zealand working on that little Hobbit movie? Is that where you've been the last while?
That's where I've been for the last month.
Is that what they're calling it, that little Hobbit movie?
That's what you're calling it.
Yeah, okay. Just checking.
And how crazy, I know we want to talk about Real Steel, we'll get to it in a second, but how crazy is it being down there in the country that Peter Jackson owns? Is it just so much fun living there and working there?
It's a beautiful country. I've been there once before, but not in this respect, obviously, not working with Pete Jackson. So it's really special. It's really fun, and they're such an incredibly supportive team.
Oh. What was that? Did someone just yell?
No, I don't know.
That's the sound. I'm nursing my baby.
Oh!
Unfortunately, when you're pressed for time, you do it when you can.
You're multitasking. All right. No comment, Bean. No comment.
What did you think
no
I was going to say? We're talking
say
to Evangeline Lilly, and she has a boob out. That's all. I had to mention that. That's all.
Man.
All right. Real Steel opens everywhere today. The commercials look awesome. We've been seeing it for a while. Of course, you know, you can't go wrong with Hugh Jackman. There's no one better in the world than Hugh Jackman. But what made you excited? Because you don't do a lot of movies, Evangeline Lilly. What made you excited about being in a Rock and Sock'em Robot movie?
Well, what made me excited was, like you just said, Hugh Jackman. Since I saw The Fountain by Darren Aronofsky, I thought he was one of the most talented male actors out there, and I really wanted to work with him. And then I read the script, and you know, I got 30 pages in and went, Rock and Sock'em Robots, no, not my thing. And then I got like 130 pages to the end and went, and you know, I had goosebumps and I had tears in my eyes, and it was such a sweet, heartfelt, beautiful movie that I really wanted to be a part of it. I thought it was a film that reflected the children's films and stories of my day, you know, when I was a kid, when everything for children had to have a moral and had to be pure and
right.
had to be cynical. And I just don't think there's anything out there like that anymore. And I find that, you know, now that we've been screening it with people, even audiences who are adults like myself are enjoying it as well, because I think people are aching for something that's got some purity and some heart in it nowadays in this world of, you know, cynical movies.
Interesting. And I do understand that we kind of get to know and even, you know, root for and fall in love with and identify with some of these robots, which I think people are surprised about once they sit down in the theater. They don't expect that to happen, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think they expect the robots to just, you know, be these steel things that beat each other up and to feel adrenalized and to feel excited. But I think that they're all given individual personalities, and thus you get to connect with them and either connect them or not connect with them. And the one of the main stars of the film is this little robot called Adam, who's this underdog robot that you cannot help but have a little soft spot for.
All right, but I just have to check. You know it's a robot, right?
I know it's a robot.
Okay, I'm just checking. Just want to make sure that
there's a whole lot of debate out there. I mean, I was at a screening where there was a Q&A afterwards, and there was, like, we surveyed the audience, and 50% of the audience was convinced that robot was a living being.
All right.
Wow. Interesting. We're talking about the film Real Steel that opens everywhere today. Actress Evangeline Lilly is on the phone, and we don't get to talk to you very often, Evangeline, so we're always happy when we do. I got the feeling, and maybe I'm going to sound foolish here, and maybe this is a dumb thing to say. I always got the impression that you were not somebody who wanted to be an actress or wanted to be a movie star. You kind of fell into it. And I was afraid after Lost went off the air that you were just going to disappear and you were going to leave the industry and we'd never see you again. I'm so happy you didn't.
Well, you know, you're not wrong, and I don't think that that's an unfair assessment of, you know, where I was at. And when I was working on Lost, I just really felt like there was other things that I was more passionate about, and I still feel like there's other things I'm more passionate about that I'm working towards. But in the meantime, it just happened to be that two opportunities arose that I just couldn't say no to. And I think everyone, you know, in my life in the industry kept telling me, that's what's going to happen, by the way. You're going to say you don't want to act, but then these great opportunities will come and you won't be able to resist. And apparently, they were all right.
That's best case scenario, right? That's best case scenario that they come along and you go, I can't resist, I got to do it.
Yeah, and that's what you want as an actor, right?
Sure.
You want things that are irresistible, as opposed to like, oh, I have to work because otherwise I won't pay my rent.
Right,
right. And do you find, in our remaining moments here, do you find that you love the craft of acting? That's something that's still really, really enjoyable for you? Or is it just something that you're really, really good at and a lot of people like to see you do?
I think it's more the latter, although I have to say, when I worked with Hugh Jackman, he was such a joy to work with that I actually discovered that acting could be fun. And I really hadn't found that in the past, that acting could be fun.
It was just
I always sort of found that acting was a great big chore. Like, it was difficult. It was hard. It was a lot of pressure, and it was difficult to do.
Well, you'd go into makeup on Lost, and they'd put mud on you.
Yeah. Like,
what? How long can you enjoy that?
Well, and I'm running from an invisible smoke monster. I think talking to real human beings is a lot more fun.
Exactly. Well, you're a fascinating person, and the movie is called Real Steel, and it opens up everywhere today with Evangeline Lilly and Hugh Jackman, and Hope Davis is in it, and Rockin' Sock'em Robots. I mean, it seems like it has a little something for everything. I'm so glad we got a chance to talk to you again, and maybe, you know, when The Hobbit comes out, maybe you'll come on back. We'll do it again.
All right. That sounds like a deal.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
And it is time for an all-new Beans Death Corner.
Not yet.
Mm-hmm. Now it is. Mug says not yet.
All right, here we go.
Hey, everybody. Gather all the kiddies around the radio. It's time for Bean's Death Corner.
Bean loves death any time of day. He gets all giddy and screams hooray.
There's something wrong in his head. Death.
We don't know what's wrong with Bean, but now you'll get to see what we mean.
Oh, Bean loves death. Oh, Bean loves death.
I love death.
It's not that I love death.
Yes,
it's that
is.
I pre-ordered the new Final Destination 5 movie, and I can't wait for it to come out on DVD so I can watch it every single
day. Here's what you need to know about Bean. He's got a Google alert for the obituaries in the New York Times.
Well, of course I do. Who doesn't?
All
Here's a bizarre and tragic story out of my state of Washington, Edgewood, a Seattle suburb in the news. And by the way, you can see more on all of these stories, see photos and video in some cases at kevinandbean.com. We do put each of the death corners on the line for you, too. Edgewood, Washington is where it happens. A 17-year-old goes to visit his uncle just last Friday night, Kevin, and he sees that his uncle is involved in an altercation in the front yard. There's a guy trying to hit this boy's uncle in the head with a pipe. So the 17-year-old says, no, not here, you don't. So he runs over there, pulls out a knife, and stabs the dude to death who's in an altercation with his uncle. That man, ladies and gentlemen, who he killed, turned out to be his own father.
What?
That
it was very dark out. The police said it was difficult to see. They had been estranged from one another. The boy did not recognize his own father as the one who was in a fight with his brother and ended up killing him. How about that? Is that crazy?
Wow.
How's that for
so
bad surprise up. After the fact, right? Now we take you into the air. This is a tragic story about a beautiful young couple that had been living in Singapore. He was from New Zealand. He had met his girlfriend in Singapore. They'd been dating for about 3 years, and he was taking her back to New Zealand to meet his family. In fact, to help celebrate his mom's 50th birthday. Well, on the plane, in the air, about 90 minutes into the flight, they're flying on Jetstar when they come around with the in-flight meal, and the man gets the beef. You should never get the beef. You always get the chicken. That's the moral of this story.
That is the tip.
He starts choking, and he dies on the flight with his girlfriend sitting next to him. I thought he was laughing very hard. Then I looked at his face, and his eyes were rolling, and he couldn't talk. His lips were turning purple, she later said.
Oh.
A doctor and two nurses on board quickly rushed to help after hearing her scream for help. They performed CPR on him but were unable to save him. The doctor came to me and said he was so sorry, he did his best. Now, they're 2 hours into an 11-hour flight at this point over the ocean. By the way, it's not like there's an easy way to turn around and go back or something like that.
She doesn't have to sit next to him.
They took the body and covered it in a sheet and put it in the galley, but she said she didn't want him back there by himself under a sheet, and she requested that they bring him back and put him in the seat next to her where she sat next to his corpse for 9 hours as they made it to New Zealand.
That's sweet of her, but everyone else around had to be going, hey, galley for me. I'm good with that. I don't need him dead guy there.
Yeah, that's no good. And by the way, I was thinking about this. If you had talked them into turning around and going back to Singapore, you still then would have had to take the body probably and fly it home to New Zealand where he was from to be with his family and be buried there, right? So you might as well take advantage of the free air travel to get the body home at this point.
I am shocked you can't save a choking victim.
That's a great point.
I'm shocked there's a doctor and two nurses on a flight. And they can do nothing.
Yeah, it seemed like they had a lot of things going in their favor, but it didn't work out. He was only 31 years old, too, by the way, which is very sad. Here's a story out of Parsons, Tennessee this time. I don't know what the details were that drove this guy so crazy about the seating arrangements as the father of the bride was helping to plan his little daughter's upcoming wedding. But apparently he got into a fight with the pastor of the church.
What?
He lunged toward the pastor. The pastor pushed the man and he fell and hit his head on the pavement and later died at the Vanderbilt Medical Center. Now, here's the ethical question involved here, Lisa. You're the bride. Your dad just died bitching about the seating arrangements. Do you go on with the wedding? And if you do, do you use the same pastor? Or is it at this point, it's just too uncomfortable to be in the same room with the guy?
I think you'd find a new pastor. Probably a new church.
You'd have to find a new pastor. I mean, definitely. But if the dad is arguing over the seating arrangements at your wedding.
But why is the pastor arguing over the seating arrangements?
I don't think you're that upset about it.
I don't know. It does put a black mark on what otherwise could have been a beautiful day, though, because poor old dad is not there to walk you down the aisle. Here's a tragic story that almost didn't make it into Bean's Death Corner. A 21-year-old motorcyclist in Brooklyn was involved in an accident. I guess a 70-year-old woman, Kevin, you'll appreciate this, was driving a Taurus. She ran a red light and ran into the motorcycle guy and pinned him on the ground.
What a surprise.
But as old people do. But fortunately, emergency personnel were nearby, and they were able to come and lift the car off of the motorcyclist. Unfortunately, before they were able to pull the man out from under the car, somebody goofed. They slipped. The car fell back down and crushed him to death.
Oh, my God.
A witness said the car was about 4 feet up, then it just dropped right back down right on top of him. Everybody in the crowd screamed. So missed it by that much. And finally, we take you to Pittsburgh, where the Steelers are the big thing. The Steelers preseason has already begun. Of course, they're playing against Atlanta this past Saturday night. Charles McGauley was at the game when he got word that his father had had a heart attack and died. So the man and his wife quickly left the Steelers preseason game. And by the way, that's a shock to me. Steelers fans are pretty diehard. I'm surprised that he would leave the game, because at this point, his dad's already dead. What could he do, right?
And he's 83.
Yeah, he was 83, right. So 54-year-old Charles leaves the game with his wife to go to dad's home to comfort mom. Well, he has a heart attack on his way to see his dead father.
What?
He also drops dead on the way to see dad. Father and son died an hour and 7 minutes apart.
And then
everyone else at Three River Stadium, or whatever it's called, died of heart attacks.
No, that didn't happen. Oh. But what are the chances that both of them died in the same night? What a bummer for that family, too.
Oh, my God. Way to cheer up mom, dude.
The only thing that would make it okay is if the Steelers end up winning that game. I didn't see the result of the game against Atlanta. But this has been an all-new Beans Death Corner.
That was Beans Death Corner.
Oh, Bean loves death. Oh, Bean loves death.
Oh, Bean loves death so much.
So long.
No, that's not over. It's not done.
Oh, I thought we were done.
No, we're not done.
That was, hey, can you guys hear us okay? Can you guys hear us? That was ridiculously good for 7:30 in the morning, you guys.
Oh, we've been up for like 4 hours getting ready for this.
Seriously. No, welcome sure. back. How, what's your relationship like with that song now, with Yellow, now that you've been playing it for more than 10 years? Is it one that you still are excited about? You still enjoy it?
I think we see it as kind of
one of our biggest blessings. You know, it's been a passport everywhere. We would never have got to meet you two handsome fellas without
well,
it.
Well, that is what it's all about. That's and the most we, important thing.
I think we all know that.
We would
that.
Never have gone so many places. You know, it was our ticket to so many places.
When you think back on when that came out, was it a surprise to you how quickly and how big that song became a hit?
Yes. Any time we have anything that's even moderately successful, we're surprised because we're English.
So, you do look for the rain, don't you?
We do definitely look for the rain. But I know sometimes when we're singing, I still feel like, what on earth is this thing about? But it always feels good. It makes me
well,
feel...
Well, if you don't know, don't look at us.
Exactly.
That's what we think.
What's yeah, exactly.
Do you, does it mean something? Does it grow into meaning something different than it did when you first wrote it?
Will's going to answer this.
Will?
Sorry, what was the question?
Does it mean different things now than it did like 10 years ago when you wrote it? Can we turn on Will's mic? I don't think his mic's on. There we go.
It still means the same thing. Like Chris says, it was a kind of... It helped us immensely when we were starting out, and it was one of the first reasons that we ever got to go anywhere. So it's very special still, definitely.
Yeah. Right. Coldplay is here. It's Breakfast with Coldplay on the World Famous KROQ because they are back.
Certainly is.
They have emerged out of hibernation. They've been gone for a while. Now they're back with a brand new album coming out on Monday. I want to know. It's on. Yeah, it sounds good. It's on, Chris.
Okay.
I want to know, because we'll talk a lot about the new record, of course, but I want to know, what was hibernation like for you guys? You came off that massive tour, that huge hit album, Viva La Vida, and then what do? You just go underground and try to forget you're in a band for a while, or you're able to turn it off?
We throw away every razor we own just to grow beards and get very fat and try and write balance for a period of 2 to 3 years.
Were there things that you wanted to do that you couldn't do because you were so busy with that last record, and now, hey, I finally got some time off, I'm going to go, whatever it is, paint, mountain climb, what, whatever it is.
Sometimes do both if you are a good climber. You can hold on with one hand and paint with the other.
Sure.
But we didn't really have time for that, you're right. We feel very excited about being in the band at the moment, so we just do that. I know it sounds a bit boring.
Yeah. But you've done a lot of... You did a lot of festivals this past summer, and some bands will take a year or 2 years off. You guys just don't feel the need for that, or that's not how you work? Or?
I think we're all between 32 and 34 now, so we only have a limited period of our bass player, Guy, being so handsome.
You got to take advantage of that.
So we're trying to just milk that for all it's worth while we're still relatively young. So we can go painting and rock climbing when we're a bit older.
Okay. That is amazing to me that you guys are still so young, by the way.
Well, we're not that young.
That's pretty darn in the rock and roll game in particular. I mean, true. You're a lot younger than a lot of your contemporaries.
Yes.
That's true.
But we look a lot older.
You make up for it by looking bad?
We make up for it by looking 70.
How did you know the new album that comes out on Monday was done and ready? How did you put a button on it and go, that's it, we're ready to release that onto the world? Because Kevin and I have always talked to people about how... At some point, you just have to go, we're done, we're finished, or you'll work on it forever.
Well, that's a great question.
Ow.
I enjoyed that.
That was my brain.
Ow.
That's a good question. We were writing and writing and writing, and I kept bringing in new ideas to Will, our drummer, who's over there, and who's also the member of the band who most like to say no to things.
Okay.
And about 2 months ago, I brought in a new idea for a song called Up in Flames, and... He heard it. He said, I'd like to play on that. I will commit my drums to that piece of music.
Right.
And he said, also, I feel like that's the final song we need. We should finish this now. Isn't that right, Will?
Pretty much. I think we end up, you know, we write and we record and we fiddle and we tweak until someone literally takes it out of our hands. So, you know, as soon as the deadline's in place, then we start working properly.
I gotcha. Yeah. And when the deadline's in place, then you can kind of finish things up. Are you the kind of guys that write 100 songs and pick 12, 15, whatever?
I mean, we have a strange writing process because it normally starts with something I bring in, like an idea. And so for every 10 of those I bring in, we probably work on one.
Because Will says no? To
because
nine
Will
of them?
Or Guy say no. And
have a lot of very bad ideas.
I have a lot of absolutely
awful
ideas.
Clearly, that's what we're talking about here. We can just get it out there.
Yes, it's true. And they'll all be on my solo album. And and then for every one that we work on, we only keep 1 out of 10 of those. So I don't know what ratio we're into now, but...
This band is successful despite you, Chris. That's what I'm learning.
It's true.
All right, it's Breakfast with Coldplay. A quick break. When we come back, the band's going to play some more for us. And... We're going to take your questions as well, because that's what we do. We're live at the Red Bull Sound Space here at the world famous K-Rock. More in a moment.
Kevin and Beans, breakfast with Coldplay.
Come on. Guys, thank you for getting up so early this morning. We were just talking to you during the commercials. We know that it is the opposite of your schedule in every way.
It's wonderful. It's a treat.
It's a treat, he lied. We are live at the Red Bull Sound Space at K-Rock. By the way, this is brand new. This is the debut appearance at K-Rock.com and of this space right here. We just built this. And you guys are the inaugural event here today, so thank you for that. And it's fantastic. You don't feel that we're in a grimy industrial building. I mean, you feel like this is like being at the Roxy or something, you know? It's pretty cool, right?
Yes, it's very... Yes, I think you're talking it up a bit, but... It is a dingy room.
He is.
But where is the open bar that I heard so much about? That's really my biggest complaint right now.
It's a beautiful space. I'll describe it for your listeners. It's palatial. It's probably 600 square meters. It's got gilded,
it's the size of the Taj Mahal is what it is.
Balconies and
exactly.
Everything's gold.
Coldplay is here because Zylo Milato, if I'm saying that right.
You're saying it completely wrong.
All right, how do you say it?
How do you say it?
We say Milo Zylo.
That's a ridiculous title. But, you can't blame me for not getting that one right.
Coming from two guys called Kevin and Bean.
Well, yeah.
So here's what I figured. I figured there must be a song by that title on the album, so I'll get from the lyrics where they got the title from.
Right. Yeah.
And it's an instrumental.
Yes.
It's just a giant F you to the fans is what it is.
Should we just leave now?
No, I just...
No, it's a strange title, I agree, and I apologize for that.
No, it's okay, but...
But we just it just had to be called Milo Xyloton for some reason.
Okay.
Maybe because it doesn't mean anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And we just wanted to have something like when they invented Dr. Pepper or Coca-Cola or Google, all these things that didn't mean anything until that thing was... I'm just talking nonsense.
Yeah, you are. But I don't think of your band as being a band that's heavily on drugs, but apparently that's what's happening now.
Well... I don't... Yeah, well...
No? All right. That title track, which I won't attempt to say again, is one example
of... It's easy to say, but you say Milo Xyloto.
Milo Xyloto.
Milo... All right. Room, Milo Xyloto.
Milo Xyloto.
All right. I think we've all committed it to memory now. That's one of the tracks on the album. There are a couple of others, too, that are almost like vignettes, like you're watching a movie or something like that, and it's like a transition piece from something to something. Tell me about that, because that's different for your records, I think.
Well, and I'm sorry I'm doing all the talking, but everyone else is feeling shy. But
that's right.
We are really trying to make albums like I'm putting together movies now, because we know that not that many people listen to full albums anymore, so we thought, well, we may as well try and make the best ones we can. Even if no one listens, we try to make it like a journey and a story from start to finish, and with little interludes and just places you can discover new things, and mm-hmm. not just a collection of singles in a row, you know. I guess because we watch so many movies, we feel that's a good way to do it.
Have you guys done any, forgive me if I sound like an ignorant Coldplay fan to not know this, but have you been involved in any kind of scoring or anything like that for movies? Is that something that would be fun?
We did the theme tune to Jaws.
I didn't realize that.
No, we didn't do that.
Cool.
That was before we were born, but we haven't. We never get approached, and thanks for bringing that up.
I think it's time.
We covered something ugly. All right, we have Dave the King of Mexico over on the other side of the room. He's got some things over there.
I got Eric from Anaheim.
Yeah, I just want to know, where do you guys draw your inspiration for your artwork and your art direction from?
Oh, good. Well, Will, our drummer, that's a great answer for that.
Will, our drummer?
Good morning. Well, on this album, we as you may be able to see from the colourful pianos and guitars and instruments, we were very much inspired by the street art and graffiti, specifically of the kind of 70s and 80s New York graffiti scene. Just because it's very inspirational in terms of turning something, you know, often you find graffiti on grey, kind of pretty ugly buildings, and to find these kind of splashes of colour and expression in these otherwise pretty grey places was a great inspiration to us, and it's instant and it's fulfilling and it's easy to do, and it's, you know, it's a very quick expression of artistry. So I think that was one of the main inspirations on this record.
Let me ask a follow up: is that true, or did you leave the stuff outside for a night and it got tagged? And you went, let's make it work.
It got tagged.
No, okay.
The album comes out on Monday, not Tuesday, like usual.
But
you're going to do another song from the record right now called Paradise, I understand.
Okay.
I'd love to hear that.
Would you really like to hear it? Or you just
I really those? Actually would.
Okay.
I'm not lying.
All right, man.
We'd like to hear a new one, a song that starts with a P.
Okay.
If that's all right.
We have two, and we'll choose this one. This is called Paradise.
Paradise. Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock.
Let's get ready for breakfast!
The Kevin and Bean Show, having breakfast with Coldplay.
Welcome back to the Red Bull Sound Space here at the world-famous K-Rock. It's Kevin and Bean. Saying hello to fans of Coldplay watching all over the world today as we stream through Ustream on KRock.com. We've got four pasty Brits in front of us. Chris, Will, Guy, Johnny are here. The band is back with a new album coming out on Monday.
You've been so mean to us, man. What's up?
Not at all.
It's like 4 o'clock in the morning and we've shut down here.
Oh, you're not pasty Brits? That was an untrue statement. Is that what you're saying?
I'm not questioning it. I'm not questioning the truth of it. I'm just saying,
don't point it out.
Why mention it on radio?
Right. Why be a hater? That's why what you say. Yeah. Why be a hater? Hey, guys, you've been around. How many albums are we up to now? Is this five?
Five.
Okay.
Yeah.
Five albums in. You're getting to the point now where you have too many songs to play in concert. How are you going to handle that? I mean, is it going to be constantly changing set lists? Or are you just going to dump some of the old songs forever? Or what are you going to do?
Yes. We're going to do both of that, those things.
Both.
No. Well, I think the reason why we keep making albums is to try and keep getting better songs. So hope we're just trying to build up to a concert where we actually really like every song.
Is there a worse Coldplay song? Is there a song that, thank God, we don't have to play that one anymore?
I think some people would argue that's quite a lot. we had an old song called Ode to Deodorant, which is a strange song we got when we were...
Oh, people know it.
Well, these are very wonderful fans. even our most hardcore and wonderful fans know that it was a terrible, terrible song.
Uh-huh.
And it was written when we were kids, and it was awful. But we only ever played that live once anyway.
So now you got the new album out, and you did some big festivals over the summer, and
yes,
you were playing some of the new songs.
Yes, sir.
Was there any kind of talk about, we can't play it, the download problem, the leaking problem, you know, people will bootleg it and take... I mean, was there any thought about that? Because you tried it out a bunch of places.
Not really. No, I think, you know, in this day and age, you can't really avoid that kind of stuff. You know, there's... Wherever you turn up, there's going to be a camera or something. So you just, you know, embrace it as part of the whole way of you know, attracting a buzz and interest, I suppose. But no, actually, the good thing about playing a lot of the new songs in festivals was that we hadn't finished recording them at that point. So it was...
Really?
Kind of informed the recording process a bit. We learned which songs were a bit too long or which songs needed, you know, speeding up a bit. So it was really useful.
So let me see if I've got this straight. So you took the songs on stage in front of... How many people at Glastonbury, for example?
300,000? No.
300 people?
I counted 300.
Okay.
And then I stopped counting. Yeah.
And then instead of doing that in private, you said, okay, then we'll go back in private and make it shorter.
Yeah.
Okay. Much. All right. Just yes. Checking. All right.
You guys did Rock in Rio. Did you see Fat Axel?
Now, what is that some sort of Guns N' Roses jibe?
No. No, Axl Rose. Guns N' Roses was at Rock in Rio. And Axl's gained like 300 pounds since the last time anyone saw him. I wondered if you guys encountered him or his shadow.
Man, you're in a bad mood this evening.
He is. No, this is his normal mood. Okay. I'm just asking if you saw him in person.
We didn't see it. We would have loved to see Axl.
You guys think you guys will ever be fat? What kind of question is that? Because I don't see you guys as being the kind of guys who are going to be fat.
We get fat, but in our own time.
Okay.
but in answer to the question about Axl, I think one of our dream things, if we could ever make happen, would be to get the original Guns N' Roses lineup to play together.
Yeah. Oh, I hear that, sister. Seriously, that would be so awesome.
How can we do that together?
I think everyone hates Axl, honestly. I think the other guys would be into it. I just think everyone hates Axl.
Oh, man. That's,
and I think he's lost it. He's a weirdo. So
I think you've been overzealous.
He has. It's
hard being a singer. Everyone has a go at you.
That's true.
Let me tell you.
In the interest of taking the microphone away from Bean, let's go over to Dave where we have some more listener questions.
How dare you?
Oh, I want to hear Bean talk all day. All right, I got Alex here.
What's the best story you guys have heard from a fan of how your music has affected them in some way?
Ooh, this is going to be gooey and emotional.
No, I'm going to try and make it not gooey and emotional now.
No, it's fine. Whatever
you want.
Whatever your story is.
We heard that there was a guy who couldn't get his horse to breed properly.
That's not true.
And he played Fix You, and lo and behold, sexual intercourse took place. And now he has the most expensive stud farm in Britain.
That's fantastic.
It's not true, of course.
No.
It's not giving me an emotional.
We talked to a listener this week on the air, because we have crazy hardcore Coldplay fans here, right? Am I right about that? Okay. We talked to a listener on the air who planned her vacation, flew to Australia to see you guys in concert down there.
Right.
Was set up on a blind date.
Yes.
Another Coldplay fan, a guy down there
that's good.
They went on the blind date. They fell deeply in love and got married.
For real?
For reals. They walked down the aisle to a Coldplay song.
Yes.
She is now 7 months pregnant with her first child, and the baby's first and middle name are Chris Martin.
Wow.
No kidding. And
just to show you how hardcore this was, she didn't get tickets to be here today. As much as, with all of that going on, she didn't make the cut for this.
You're in good form today.
It's true. Am I right? I'm not lying, right? She's not here. We didn't give her tickets.
There were other extenuating circumstances that we didn't want her here. But
I heard she was coming down the aisle to a Coldplay song, and then as the chorus kicked in, she's like, "Nah, maybe not."
That's a bad idea.
Turn and walk the other way.
But I mean, that's insane. I mean, the level of fandom that I'm sure you've heard a lot of stories that of people just you can't even imagine.
No, that's a pretty full on one.
But yeah.
You know, we love hearing stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's what makes everything worthwhile.
Have you seen a lot of tattoos and other things like
We've seen a few tattoos and funny things. And
yeah. Let me ask you about your famous British self-deprecation, because you seem to revel in the fact that there are some people out... You haven't won the whole world over. There are some people out there who still don't like you, and that I can't tell whether that bothers you or excites you, because it seems like you spend a lot of time thinking about that, and I don't know why.
No, I think we are interested in turning negatives into positives, because I feel like every kid is trying to do that at school all the time. You know, you're taking a lot of crap from people, and so if we talk about it, it's only to say, you know what, when people are really mean to you or really don't like what you're doing, don't let that distract you mm-hmm. from your passion and from your vision. We don't mean it in a self-pity way, because I couldn't give a toss about those people, but
I'm glad to hear that part.
I'm just talking about trying to say what?
Someone yelled, "Yeah, Bean." Yeah. Mad at him.
No, because it's art, and Kevin still doesn't like the Beatles, for instance. What do you have to do to get somebody to like you? He doesn't like the Beatles, so not everybody is going to like thing.
We don't mind about that. I'm saying that's absolutely cool. Yeah, it's fine. I'm just saying, in life, it's good to learn how to take negative stuff like that and turn it into positives. Every time something like that happens to us, we just flip it around. Have you seen Kung Fu Panda 2? Have you seen Kung Fu Panda 2?
I'm sorry.
So the lesson that he learns in the end of Kung Fu Panda 2, right, is the bad guy, whose name I forget, sends an evil force right at his head.
Okay.
Po, this is the lead panda, of course. And
no, this is good. Keep going.
I'm
going
to keep going. And Po, he learns how to turn that force around and send it back twice as strong.
How did we start talking about Kung Fu Panda 2?
I don't know.
So that's really
what happened?
I don't know.
Do you try and avoid reviews and press and that kind of stuff, or do you just...
Yeah, man, we're just so happy to have our job at this point.
Yeah.
You know, if someone doesn't like us, we don't care. We just care about the people that do like us, and we try.
Well, there are plenty of those. Absolutely. I mean, I can't imagine what the rush is. I see the video of you guys playing these big festivals like we've talked about. When you have literally hundreds of thousands of people singing your words back to you, I can't even imagine what that rush must feel like.
Well, it's like this. I can't even imagine what that rush must feel like. Just amplify it.
King of Mexico's in the crowd. Breakfast with Coldplay on the Kevin and Bean Show. Who's next?
I got Michael.
Morning, guys. Morning. This is a question for everyone in the band. What's your favorite song to sing in the shower?
A song to sing in the shower?
I didn't even know they showered together. This is weird. It's new to me.
Yeah, we do kind of close four-part harmonies in the shower.
Good.
Normally right. Some kind of gospel number. Johnny takes the bass line.
We do a beautiful version of Girlfriend by NSYNC.
I'd like to hear that.
Well, and yes, well, I'm sure you can come and shower with us tonight.
No, I'd rather... Just tell me about it. That's good.
I don't know, God, I'm going to dare talk. Do you sing in the shower, guy?
Not really. I'm more of a bath man myself.
All right, do you sing in the bath?
Nobody sings in the bath, Kevin.
Do you sing in the bath? He's not going to dodge that question.
A song that I quite like at the moment is it's a tune called I Need a Dollar by a guy called Aloe Black.
I love that so much.
Great song.
That's a great song. I would sing that in the shower if I took a shower.
There we go.
Very nice. Have there been, now that you guys have been together for a long time, are there areas musically that you would like to explore but have not been able to under the name of Coldplay that have kind of tempted you to go off, as so many other bands do, and have side projects or things like that to get other musical ideas out?
Like Chris said before, at this point in our career, we have nothing to lose, and we spent a lot of time experimenting with loads of different types of music. And whilst it may not kind of appear on the record, you know, quite literally, we listen to so much bizarre music, and you know, you try and take influence from lots of music from all around the world. We listen to a lot of kind of urban dance music and things like that, and Hungarian folk music, and you know, even though it doesn't kind of necessarily translate as obviously on record, it's all there. It all kind of fills your brain and gives you ideas. And so it's, we don't really feel like, we're not unfulfilled by any means. You know, we feel like we can try anything we like. It doesn't always end up on the record, but you know, you should hear some of the stuff that we were doing.
How different is it from the beginning of the process, like this album, for example? The beginning, what you thought it was going to be.
Very different this time around. We had an idea at the beginning, after Viva La Vida, that we were going to do an acoustic record, something very small and kind of intimate. And
how'd that work
reflective.
Out?
Well, we spent about a year on it.
Really?
And then we scrapped it.
Wow.
Although some of the songs have survived, you know. I think just songs came about that didn't fit that mold. In fact, Paradise is one of the songs that came about, and we thought, we can't do this acoustically, and we can't save it, you know, for 2 years' time. You know, we have to put all our eggs in one basket and just go for it. So, but some of the, Charlie Brown was in that kind of acoustic version, and that other song called Us Against the World.
Us Against the World,
in that era. So some of it survived.
You can buy the brand new Coldplay album when it comes out on Monday. The band is here on the Kevin and Bean Show at the Red Bull Sound Space at K-Rock. Let's do another number, you guys. What do you think?
We'll do another one.
You want a song? Yes. What are you in the mood for here?
This is old. Check it out.
Okay.
Nice.
That's the end of the song. Thank you.
Breakfast with the Coldplay continues in a minute on the world famous K-Rock.
It's Kevin and Beans. Breakfast with Coldplay.
Breakfast with Coldplay. We are back. You can stream it at krock.com. You can listen to it here on the radio.
We're in the Red Bull Sound Space, by the way. This is the debut of a brand new performance space here in the K-Rock building. I apologize to some of you in the back. Some of you are almost 20 feet away from the band. And I know it's very difficult for you to see them from way back there. By the way, we are streaming this on the internet, so people around the world are watching. I was just talking to them off air about comments from Japan and Russia and Korea and all sorts of places. Your fans all over the world who are watching here today. So.
You've got the best fans in the world, man.
You do have the best fans in the world. Thank you very much.
We were talking just before the break about you had the fans singing along with that song. And, of course, Fix You, the video, is you know, you in, was it Canada, Montreal someplace?
I can't remember.
And they were all singing with you. And it always strikes me as people try to speed things up. That's got to be difficult. You have to, like, turn up your ears or something because people try to speed up the song. And then does it throw you off?
I have that problem within the – I always try and speed up and then I turn around and Will look.
Oh, is that right?
He goes, hey. Evil look.
Well, that's Will's job.
He'll give it to you now. Watch.
Yeah, that's terrifying. You're practically a Harry Potter villain with that look. That is, you know, Bruce Springsteen famously screams at his fans if they start clapping along with the songs because their rhythm is always off and it screws up the band on stage. He's like, "Don't clap."
That is one of the most nonsense stories I've ever heard you tell.
But it happens to be true.
Of all the lies you've said,
it happens to be true. You guys have been doing a fair amount of publicity. You got upcoming appearances on everything from the Colbert Report, the Ellen Show, Saturday Night Live, by the way. The band is going to be back, I think, on November the 12th. But I saw a tidbit that I had not heard before in your interview you did this weekend with the CBS television, where you talked about your first gig together.
Right.
And the name that you used, I had never heard before.
Yes, and you'll never hear again.
These fans already know what it is.
Yes.
But Starfish was the name. And you said it was the story was it was necessity. You had no band name and you were getting ready to do a gig. Tell me about that day, because that's usually bands have a name before they even have songs.
Well, we had songs, but we didn't have a name. So we had my dad took us for breakfast at a cafe where railway workers eat, and we had sausages, and he said, "You boys really need to have a name," because he was sort of Svengali type at that point. And so I think Guy said, "Well, my favorite fish is a starfish." I'm making all this up.
Of all the lies you've told me.
I can't remember why we chose that name. Why did we choose that? No,
does anyone remember?
I remember Johnny and I were printing the flyers. We knew we had a gig. We knew we had songs. We knew we had a band. And we knew we had a flyer. Mm-hmm. And we knew how much it cost to get in. So we started filling in the flyer. And there was just one big gap at the top. And like, what are we gonna call it? And literally, our time on the computer was running out because we didn't have any money. So
you're paying by the hour at a public plate, right?
We only had eight letters left.
Yeah. Exactly. In fact, we just clicked on a kind of random name generator, and there it was.
Who?
It's a pretty good one.
Well, it's not that good.
Where was?
That's pretty good. That's why we dumped it.
It's pretty good. I like it.
What kind of place was the gig, and how many people were you playing for?
It was, funnily enough, bigger than this.
Yeah.
Well.
So we've gone downhill.
You didn't realize that was going to be a high point of your career.
We had more people at our first gig called Starfish than we do in 2011 at K-Rock.
Did you?
Can you believe that?
Did you do anyone else's songs the first? No,
we just went straight
did
your into.
Own? We did play straight. One of our own songs twice, though.
You did, really?
Sure. Yeah.
On accident or just because you didn't have enough songs?
It was an encore. We thought an encore meant actually an encore.
Again, again.
Play it again. Yeah.
How long?
We didn't mean that.
How long did it take before you guys came up with a song that was good enough to stick around, to actually end up being a song that you eventually record? I mean, you must have gone through a bunch of songs before you got to the point.
One from our very first gig, in all honesty, one song, a song called High Speed, made it to our
no
first
way.
Album.
No way!
Yes,
that's
the
impressive.
Rest didn't make it, and... the next gig, I think we played a song called Shiver, and that made it to our first album. So it was, but we, what was funny, because we were waiting for Will, our lovely drummer who you keep hearing from, he was the last to join the band. So we had quite a few songs we'd already gone through before he joined. So a lot of the really terrible ones were out of the way even before. He was playing drums.
Sure. It's Breakfast with Coldplay here on the world-famous K-Rock. Kevin Bean, Coldplay, Dave the King of Mexico in the audience with more listener questions.
Are you really the King of Mexico?
I am.
Wow. Yeah, it's pretty
Chris,
cool.
we call him that because his parents are Hispanic and they speak Spanish. And he got Fs in high school in Spanish.
Well,
who needs Spanish?
So we call it the cake of Mexico. All right.
That's not an up-and-coming language. There's no use for that here.
All right, enough about me. I'm here with Derek.
Hi, how have you guys managed to stay together for so long and continue to make great music?
Thank you very much. That's a lovely question. Well, Johnny never speaks, and so he doesn't tell anyone what he really thinks, which is best, I think.
He's sitting on seething hate right now, Chris. You just don't know it.
I don't know. He'll answer. Johnny will answer.
All right.
We're quite nice to each other. I think that helps. We have good lawyers.
But a band that's been together this long, you have to have fights. You have to not agree.
We had quite a lot of fights very early on, and agreed to get over them.
Okay.
And we learned a lesson. You know, we've learned that we're not the best musicians in the world, and never will be. But what we do have is each other. You know, we have the chemistry of being together, and
all right, everybody. Oh.
That's why I don't speak. I'm too cheesy.
Very nice. I had 8:30 in the office pool.
I'm so sorry. I could advocate so early.
No worries.
One more question, Dave, before we hear some more live music from Breakfast with Coldplay. What's up?
I'm here with Carmen.
Hi, Coldplay.
Hi.
Who are some of your favorite artists out today?
Oh, okay. That's a good question. Mine, I'm going to start with Rihanna. I'm going to start with Arcade Fire, and I'm gonna, even though he's about 3 years older than us, I'm going to say Bruce Springsteen. I don't know what Guy would say. What would you say, Guy?
You put me on the spot now, you see. Tell me some people that are out today.
And then you'll vote on them?
We'll come back.
Well, I like Lana Del Rey. That song Video Games is absolutely stunning. I think that's a cracker.
All right, that's a good tip. It's a cracker, is it? Yeah.
Johnny, what'd you got?
A cracker or a banger.
Johnny?
You're with Will.
He's with Will.
He's with Will.
We'll come back to Guy. Look.
All right.
You know...
Hang on, Guy.
Has Guy come up with one?
I don't think he has. That's why we're going back to him.
You know, I kind of listen to a lot of old music. I find that with iTunes and stuff now, if a record comes out now or if it's come out in 1975 and I haven't heard it, it's kind of equally as...
Do you have a name of any band that has ever recorded in history?
Well, I found this band... I think they're called Cool in the Gang or something.
No? Not heard of them.
Hey, before you sing another song here, Chris, since you brought up Arcade Fire.
Yes, sir.
Are you guys competitive with the other bands that are, and there aren't many very successful rock bands anymore. Arcade Fire is one of them. Are you competitive with a group like that? Do you look at them as contemporaries that you want to be better than?
That's a great question because I think, like you said, the bands, for whatever reason, there's less of them, either because of investment or whatever. And I find that amongst us and Arcade Fire and the Kings of Leon and even U2 and all that, there's like everyone is very friendly and respectful to each other. But singers especially, we're all very competitive. So it's like a polite, but everyone wants to write better songs than everyone else. It's a healthy thing, but it's definitely there.
So when the new Arcade Fire album comes out, you go out and buy it or download
for sure.
It. And then you go, oh!
Yeah,
they killed me. Why didn't I write that song? I mean, is that the kind
but
of thing you think?
Well, that just happens with any song. I feel that way about the Adele song, Someone Like You. When that came out, I was like,
yeah.
Oh, man.
Change the game.
Yeah, so it's constantly, you know, someone throws a songwriting punch and you have to work out how to throw one back. It's healthy.
But that makes it fun, though. Makes it fun.
Yeah, I think at this point, it's stupid kind of bands bickering amongst each other because, you know, it doesn't mean anything. But there's definitely competition.
Sure, yeah. Well, your new album is coming out on Monday, as we mentioned. It's Breakfast with Coldplay here on the World Famous Character. You're going to do a new song for us.
Yes, sir.
What's this one all about?
This is called Charlie Brown. This is about running around town, writing, painting, and just having fun.
There you go.
All right.
Live Coldplay on K-Rock.
I just had to make up that answer, by the way.
That's a brand new Coldplay, and it's Breakfast with Coldplay. We'll be right back on the world famous K-Rock.
It's Kevin and Beans. Breakfast.
You mean like a big breakfast machine
with Coldplay.
We are live. The band is here, performing live, and we're getting questions from the audience here on the Kevin and Beans Show.
Dave, the King of Mexico, is with Coldplay fans here at the Red Bull Sound Space at K-Rock. Dave, who's up next to talk to the band, please?
This is Brandon.
Hello, Brandon.
How's it going?
Hello, Brandon.
Were there ever any challenges you faced personally or as a band that made you question your motivation or goals in producing your music?
Yes, every day there's something, you know. Sometimes we get, a song that doesn't... What's that noise?
What is that noise?
Somebody's radio, it sounds like.
Someone in the room is listening to another radio.
That's true. Somebody's listening to something else right now.
Unforgivable.
Can we tell where it's coming from? This is weird. There we go. Nice job.
So sometimes we have the challenge of another radio show coming through while we're doing one. And we sometimes we have things as simple as we can't get a chorus to sound good. And so we think, this is a waste of time. And then we have sometimes outside factors. We occasionally get, like, sued or things like that, you know, wrongly. And there's all kinds of challenges. And also sometimes we listen to records that we think sound much better than ours, and that drives you on. So it's kind of many little things.
Hey, Chris, the rush of being on stage must be worth all of that.
Well, 100%, 100%.
It seems like a lot of that is negative and, you know, lawsuits or whatever. You just, like, I just want to play music.
But that was the question, right?
No, I know. But I'm saying it must be such a great thing.
When you have lots of people singing along with a song, it's the most incredible feeling. And it's worth, you know, we take twice as much of the nonsense to do that.
So you're saying you want twice as much of the nonsense. I'm unclear. I'm sorry.
Do you guys feel like you are one of the biggest bands in the world? Maybe the biggest band in the world?
Well, yeah.
In all of recorded history?
We're definitely the tallest.
No, I ask because when you're growing up and you look at bands, whoever you loved when you were growing up, you had a vision of what it must be like to be in that band. Now you're in that band, and I'm just wondering how it squares with what you thought it would be.
I don't know, man. Like you said, because we're English, we'll be self-deprecating, but it really doesn't feel like that when you're in the middle of it.
Yeah.
This room feels very similar to the room we first ever played in, so it's hard to sort of think in terms of size and stuff. It doesn't...
Viva La Vida was the best-selling album of the year in the whole world, the year it came out, 2008, I think. Now, do you look at that and go, oh, if this one's not, then, you know, we've failed? Or do you not have those kinds of expectations?
Well, no, but only because Adele sells like 50 times...
Yeah, you're not going to touch her. We know that, right?
Yes, well, we don't... No, it doesn't...
How much do you think about sales at all? Maybe not at all. I don't know.
Now, not very much. Because, like I said, there's so few bands, and we're very lucky to even have a job.
Right. This lady next to me was singing along to every word of the new song that's not out yet a minute ago.
Yes.
Now, she's stealing your music, right? I mean, we know that. There's no question. You've already downloaded that on the internet, right?
I've been to 5 of the shows.
Five of them. Yeah, you're learning from the lives. There we go. All right.
Right back at you.
Good answer. Nice.
Dave, we have another question over there?
Yeah, I'm with someone who must have ditched work because she made up this name. It's Belem.
Belem.
Belem, okay.
Hi.
Hello. Hi, Belem.
Wanted to know what you guys'
favorite...
If that
is your real name.
What you guys' favorite pie is.
Our favorite pie?
Yeah.
Oh, finally. Finally we get that one out there.
Probably American pie, too. What is our favorite pie? I'm going to have to consult the band on this, but I'm...
Chris, the girl right in the front here was telling Will, how about a rim shot? He's not paying attention. You need to have rim shots after a few of those.
You could help the
Come
guy
on,
out
wait,
with some rim shots.
Don't give me the look.
You're on rim shots, we're on pies.
All right. Just saying.
My favorite pie would be apple and cinnamon.
Apple and cinnamon, all right.
Guy?
Guy?
You have to shout, man. You have to shout.
He's not a shouter.
No.
Banoffee, yeah, that's a good one.
That's not a real thing. That's not a real thing. What's a banoffee? That sounds like something Belem would make up.
You know, it's like banana and caramel and
yeah.
Well, that sounds good.
That sounds good, but we don't have that here, I guess.
Yes, you do.
That's a British thing.
Yes, we do.
Really? I guess I just didn't know about it. Okay. All right. We're running. I can't even believe how fast this time is going by. We're almost out of time. We'll have time for a few more questions, but we want to make sure the guys have time to play, so let's do another song right now. What do you think?
Okay.
What do you want to do here? Breakfast with Coldplay, world famous K-Rock.
That didn't sound too enthusiastic, I've got to say.
Yeah, let's try it again.
Okay. Oh, we're going to actually play a song.
Well, we hope.
Let's go then, Will.
That was our dream. I don't know if it's yours.
Here we go. When you try but you don't succeed, when you get what you want but not what you need, when you feel so tired but you can't sleep, stuck in reverse, when the tears come streaming down, or you lose something you can't replace, when you love someone but it goes to waste, what could be worse? And light
Breakfast with Coldplay. We'll return in a minute on the world famous K-Rock.
Are you ready for breakfast?
You ready?
Oh, good.
It's Kevin and Beans. Breakfast with Coldplay.
We are back. Coldplay is here. Red Bull Sound Space at K-Rock. Debuting this performance space with the band Coldplay. Their new record comes out on Monday. Hey, I know what I wanted to ask you guys because we're almost out of time here. You did Fix You right before the break. It was beautiful.
It was for Kevin.
You saw, yeah, I heard Kevin requested that. I didn't know that's how it worked, but that's awesome. Did you see the Young at Heart movie with the old folks all singing that song?
I saw a bit of it, yeah.
What'd you think of that?
I thought it
was
great.
As a songwriter, when you guys see one of your songs done by somebody, anybody else, I imagine it has to be an interesting experience for you.
Well, it's funny because the film, that movie is amazing, but I always have that feeling that you have when you hear your voice on an answering machine, even if someone else is singing one of our songs, I get sort of tingly and weird.
All of those people in that movie are dead now. You know that, right?
What?
No,
what
I'm just saying because they were so old at the time.
Not all of them, surely.
How about the Willie Nelson cover of The Scientist?
That's wonderful.
What'd you think of that? I mean, he's a legend. You see a legend singing one of your songs.
A legend with ponytails.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Both are true.
And one more I wanted to ask, because you too did Yellow at Glastonbury.
I'm sure you did.
Sure you, that must be, I mean, I can't even imagine what that's like. You have to have been so humbled by that.
Well, they don't really have that many hits, so...
Well, they got to fill out the set, right?
They needed to fill out the set.
They have to borrow from you?
What are you guys' plans coming up here? Now, I know it's, October, so through the rest of the year, what are your plans, and then the next year?
We're probably going to take a holiday, get all fat, and maybe open some kind of strip club.
Okay, fat, open a strip club.
I like it.
Either that, or we'll just work really hard and play lots of concerts.
Okay.
One or the other.
Is 2012, is that a big touring year? Are you guys going to circle the world again?
Know.
Or you don't know yet.
We're having that discussion. It all depends on our hips.
On your hips?
Whether they can stand the pressure.
Okay. Well, I mean, when you're in your early 30s, I mean, you really got to be careful about stuff like that, obviously. It has been such a thrill to have you guys back on. Kevin and I have been lucky enough to be interviewing you guys on and off for the last 10 years, and we always so look forward to when you come to town and we get a chance to spend some time with you. We're so excited about the new record, and we can't wait, you know, for all the good things that are coming.
I can safely say you're our favorite pair of DJs in combat shorts.
All right. Quite a compliment. And thanks to the Coldplay fans, thanks to Red Bull Sound Space here at K-Rock. I know we have time for just one more.
Thanks, everybody.
What do you want to close it out with today, guys?
We're going to close it with a song called Every Teardrop is a Waterfall.
Fantastic. I know that song.
Thank you, everybody. See you later. Thanks, Kevin. Thanks, Pete.
Okay, boys.